Did you know? University of Alaska Southeast has more online learning programs than any other university in Alaska, with programs in business, arts and sciences, education, and career education. UAS is a learning community where your professors are mentors and friends, on campus and online. Take a look at all UAS has to offer at uas.alaska.edu.
Good evening, everybody. I will call the March 16, 2015, regular meeting 2015-07 to order. If you will all rise for the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Ms. Becker?
Here.
Ms. Crane?
Here.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Here.
Mr. Keel?
Here.
Mr. Nankervis?
Here.
Ms. Troll?
Here.
We think that was a here. Ms. White?
Here.
In stereo, thank you.
Hello, here.
There she is. There she is. Mary Sanford.
Here.
A quorum is present.
Okay, we have two orders for special orders of business tonight. One is to read a resolution for the members of our community within the Masonic Temple community proclamation, and then to recognize an old man leaving our PRAC division, Mr. Wilson. So, if Madam Becker, my voice is going, so Deputy Director Ms. Becker will read the proclamation. If we can have Masonic Temple people come on up.
Mm-hmm. While they're coming up, I'll just say it's a real honor to be able to read this and recognize the Masonic organization, as my daughters were in the Rainbow Girls from 11 years old to 21. So. Okay. This is the mayoral proclamation. Whereas Masonry is the world's oldest fraternity, with its roots in the Scottish and English stonemasters' guilds of the 16th and 17th centuries, the modern fraternity organization traces its lineage to 1717, when the Grand Lodge of England formed at the meeting of four lodges at the Good and Gridiron Ale House in London. Whereas Masonic membership includes 6 million men of all faiths and origins across the globe, with about 1.2 million in America. There are about 1,800 Masons in Grand Lodge of Alaska and 138 members in Mount Juno Gastineau Lodge number 21, which includes members Richard Harris, Governor George Parks, and the Reverend Dr. Walter Soboloff. Whereas the Gastineau Lodge chartered in 1903 in Douglas and the Mount Juno Lodge launched in 1905, the Juno Masonic community also includes the Juno Valley Bodies of the Scottish Rite, the Juno Douglas Shrine Club, Juno Chapter No. 7, Order of the Eastern Star, and the youth groups, Juno Chapter Number 3, International Order of the Rainbow for Girls, and DMLA. Whereas Masons in North America and their affiliated organizations provide more than $2 million a day for charitable and philanthropic efforts. Whereas the Juno Masonic community aids in funding transportation for patients and their families to the Shriners Hospital for Children. Children with speaking impairments are assisted through Rite Care, a philanthropic organization of the Scottish Rite. Dozens of Juno students have benefited from the Stevens Trust, Goldstein Scottish Rite Trust, and East Starl scholarships administered by the Masonic community. Whereas the tradition of Cornerstone Lane can be traced back to the first uses of stone in buildings, the cornerstone had to be formed and laid with precision, as all other stones in the structure were placed in relation to it. April 4, 2015, commemorates the first Juno Cornerstone Lane ceremony at the first Masonic Lodge building in the capital city since 1956. Now, therefore, I, Meryl Sanford, Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, on behalf of the City and Borough Assembly, do hereby proclaim April 4, 2015 as National Masonic Day in the City and Borough of Juneau, and encourage all citizens to join me in recognizing the Juneau Masonic community for its years of service to build a better world for us all, with service to families, communities, and the nation. In witness whereof, I have hereto set my hand and caused the seal of the City and Borough of Juneau to be affixed this 16th day of March, 2015. Meryl Sanford, Mayor.
All right. Thank you very much, Deputy Mayor Becker. And if you guys want to turn around, I give it to the gal. She deserves it here. So this is the proclamation that you guys get to take home with you. And I want to congratulate you and say thank you very much for all the work that you guys do within our community, and we truly appreciate it. If one of you wishes to say a few words, you're more than welcome to.
Thank you very much. I'll keep it brief. Cornerstone. That's right. It's amazing. I talk, people hang up. Our new home is 9315 Glacier Highway, and we'll be having the cornerstone laying on 2 p.m. on April 4th. It's open to the public, and we'd like to welcome everyone to come down and you know, participate in our cornerstone laying. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
What are you trying to do? Get a free pin out of him?
Yeah, he's complimenting on his regalia.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Now we have, and I don't know if we have to make the whole assembly out there to get this guy to be able to get up here in front with everybody else. But Mr. Wilson, why don't you come forward?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Kirk Duncan, the Director of Parks and Recreation, and I just want to take a minute to thank all the citizens that volunteer for all of our advisory boards and all the great job that everybody does. A great example is Jeff Wilson, and Jeff was appointed to the Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee in June of 1999, and in December 2007, he was elected chair. And Jeff has served as chair until leaving the committee this year. Under Jeff's leadership, the PRAC took public comment on a wide range of issues, participated in events and grand opening of facilities, trails, and made recommendations on various issues and master plans. The opportunity for the public to comment on issues, concerns, projects, and even words of gratitude are paramount in making decisions and recommendations. Some of the testimony heard related to conservation easements, naming of parks, creation of ordinances, and even controversial issues like the proposed Valley Ice Arena, the Auk Lake Management Plan, and the off-road vehicle park. Many trails and facilities were built and dedicated while Jeff was chair. To name a few, restoration of the Treadwell Ditch Trail, the Auk Lake Trail, Gaston Meadows Trail, the Amalgam Meadows Trail, Seawalk, Zach Gordon covered basketball court, Savigal Park, Pavilion, Cope Park, and Miller Field saw improvements of permanent restrooms and concession stands, and new parks and playgrounds such as West Juno Rotary Park and Project Playground at Twin Lakes. The Treadwell Arena, the John Cowett Memorial Warming Hut, the Empty Chair Memorial at Capitol School Park, Jensen Old Arboretum, and the Diamond Park Aquatic Center.
He's been busy.
Recommendations and direction on park master plans was given for Auk Lake Wayside, Treadwell Mine Historic Park, Cope Park, Marine Park, Under the Bridge Park site, and Capitol School Park. As part of Jeff's duties as chair, he was also a liaison to the Assembly Lands Committee. Jeff's dedication to the city and borough of Juneau and its citizens is clearly evident and easy to see everywhere throughout the borough. His leadership protected our valuable natural resources, promoted healthy lifestyles, and created recreational opportunities for the young and the old. Jeff, thank you very much.
So I just want to say and recognize Jeff as a leader of one person out of between 300 and 350 citizen committee members within our city and borough. We have between 300 and 350 people involved in our advisory committees. As Ms. Weldon knows, she has to try to keep track of all of them and keep them trained. But Jeff just shows you the great job that our citizens do for us in filling these shoes. Jeff's been around since 1901 doing this. But I just want to say thank you very much, Jeff, for your continued dedication to our city. And I'm sure that you're not going to go away. And just, I know that you were really wanting to stay long enough to see that section of the bridge park from the bridge up to Gold Creek completed. But I think that it's going to be moving forward this year. So you're close to it, and you'll be there to dedicate it with all of us, I'm sure. And I want to just say thank you very much for a great job.
Thank you very much. I just want to thank the I need the gavel. I just want to thank all the members of the city assembly, and it's been a pleasure serving with all of you. And my first parks director, city manager, Ms. Kiefer, has been you started us all off. So thank you, and it's been a real pleasure. I really enjoyed every minute of it. So thank you.
Get to another committee soon.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, you gotta go over here to
it's been a great pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You and I didn't get it.
Kate, are you back with us?
All right. Before we go into the LID and recess into that, we need to straighten up some of our agenda tonight. So we have a couple of changes, Madam Manager. Did you have something you wanted to pull?
I would like to take off the minutes of February 23rd.
Okay.
We need to work on those, and we will bring them back to you.
Okay, for correction?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any objections to that? So ordered. And then we also have an ordinance at the end of the meeting tonight, 2015-02, which is the Hidden Valley one, and I would recommend that we pull that until the applicants are here to either speak or not speak to it. So, Ms. Becker, would you make a motion to pull 2015-02?
Okay. I move that we pull 2015-02 and ask for unanimous consent.
Until the next assembly meeting.
Until the next assembly meeting.
Is there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Madam Manager, was there anything else we needed to move around or change here?
No, I don't think so. We'll come on a couple changes, but those will come through committee.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so we will recess and convene as the Board of Equalization for the purpose of holding public hearings on the assessment rolls and separate assessments appearing thereon for LID number 60 and LID number 66. At the conclusion of the hearing, the Board of Equalization will recommend to the Assembly that it approve the assessment rolls with any revisions or corrections recommended by the Board. The Board will then adjourn and the Assembly will reconvene. The Assembly will consider resolutions 2715 and 2717 approving the rolls, fixing the time and method of payment, setting the date of levy, and fixing the time of delinquency and penalties and interest as part of the consent agenda. We talked about this whole series of events that was formed in 1901 also, an old part of the code, but we'll work our way through it. So I will recess the assembly, and we will reconvene as the Board of Equalization for the purpose of holding public hearings on LAD number 60 first. So, if you go to LID number 60, which is resolution
2715.
Correct? Okay. Do we have anybody from the public who wishes to testify on LID number 60? Madam Manager, do you want to describe LID 60? As far as, is there anybody here to testify on either one of the LID? One, and that's the next one, right? Okay. Okay, so we'll move forward with LID number 60. And if there's no questions from the assembly members, we'll move forward to LID number 96.
Yes. We need a motion too.
I know, we'll do that towards the end of the meeting here after we get through with 96 also. Okay, so let's go to LID number 96. And Ms. Lori Craig, you want to come up and give us your public testimony on LID number 96, which is resolution 2717?
15. Good evening. My name is Lori Craig. I live at 10825 Glacier Highway. I'm one of 14 homes along the stretch at Auk Lake where we received sewer. And I want to say thank you for doing this important thing, not just for us as homeowners, but also particularly for Auk Lake. Everything runs downhill in Juneau, and this was an important thing. And so I want to say thank you. I think it's a reasonable amount. In case you're interested, I've paid probably about $17,000 or $18,000 thus far for my portion privately to get connected to the sewer. So I think this is reasonable. It's important. It's a little more than I expected to pay, but that's just the cost that it is, so thank you very much. It's a smart thing to do. I just hope that eventually we will upgrade our sewer treatment facilities so that by the time water reaches the ocean, it will be in better shape than it is today.
Thank you, Ms. Craig. And we're talking about 2715 now. Resolution 2715.
Got it.
Okay. Any questions for the applicant? Any questions for staff? Thank you very much, Ms. Craig. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had a general question on both. I know at the last Public Works and Facilities Committee. I asked some questions about an LID in terms of its overall cost. There's been some emails back and forth about the cost of a LID for a road out in the valley. The answers I got back basically indicated that there sort of wasn't a standard approach to setting how much an LID costs. And it was hard to sort of compare various LIDs on how much an individual property owner would pay. And so when I looked at these two, and if my numbers are wrong, the numbers are wrong, but I believe that the total cost of LID 60 in the letter that noticed this hearing said the total cost was $830,000 and that the persons, property owners that were part of the LID were going to pay $66,600. If I divide that figure into the 830, I come up with 12.4%. The other LID, number 96, the total cost was $535,000. The owners, the property owners, were going to pay a total of $23,400. That came out to 22.86%. And so I guess my question to staff, if they can explain why one would be at a 12% and one would be at a 22%, and I guess in a more general sense, is there any way in which they can explain how these things are formed? Because it just doesn't make sense to me that they would vary so broadly. In terms of individual amount, I think on one they were paying $3,800 a property owner, and the other was $1,800. I just need some explanation. I don't understand that.
Okay. Madam Manager.
Yes, and I will turn it over to Mr. Bohan, and he can explain it to you.
Thank you. Essentially, the two LIDs you're comparing here, the $1,800 versus the $3,700, you're comparing a sewer project to a road project, so apples and oranges completely. A sewer LID has been assessed since day one of our sewer expansion, and the real reason why we've assessed the sewer LID is because that's the way we've always done it from the sewers in town. I mean, we've faced this on sewers for the 15 years that I've been working here directly, and longer than that for the 20 years that I've been in town. I know the LIDs have been there. The $1,800 was based on a $2,800 assessment, which was originally based and set with the West Valley and the North Douglas sewer expansions, which was the big push to start infilling our service area with sewer over the past 10, 12 years. The $1,000 deduction for these folks is because they are all pumping into a collection main. So they basically, they're a small area that's isolated from our system. It didn't make financial sense for the city to spend a couple $300,000 to install a large sewer lift station for 12 homes that could be pushed through their pump station to the system. So that, you know, that's your sewer. Essentially, we fixed the LI, or we fixed an assessment six, seven, 8 years ago with the first phase of the Mendenhall Valley sewer expansion, and it has been it's basically been increasing with inflation since then, and then deductions for pumping or different disadvantaged properties. So that covers your basic sewer LID. When you look, do you have questions on sewer?
I do. So you're saying that it's a fixed amount, $2,800, regardless of how much it costs the city to do the work?
Yes. It's basically a contribution from the property owner to pay for the sewer.
And it was fixed how?
It was fixed through an assembly committee and I don't have the dates in front of me, but it was the first West Valley sewer, which would have been Industrial Boulevard area, because they did not like our high rate at the time because of the commercial properties and the cost of the project and the developability of the project. And so they voted the original LID down. The committees in the assembly at the time formed a work group and negotiated with the property owners to come to this reduced assessment. Otherwise, based on inflation, we would be at $10,000 to $12,000-$15,000 from our early sewer assessments. So that was vetted by a previous assembly.
Mr. Jones. Maybe I'll hold my comment till he's talked about the road. I think it's more of a general comment than specific.
Okay. Any other questions, comments?
Can I hear about the road? Why the 3,800 or whatever?
Sure. The road system, what we look at is basically pavement and road base. LIDs are charged for unpaved roads because the developer chose at the time not to pave the roads, and the city accepted a lower standard at the time because they were a pre-existing plat or the roads were platted prior to the current development standards. And so it's a pay now, which would have been back when the subdivision was developed, or a pay later, which is what we entered into now. For residential areas, we look for a 30, you know, basically a 70-30 split in the road and structural portion costs, so pavement and road structures, roughly a 70-30 split. And we fix that at somewhat of a flat rate so that we don't have arguing after the fact if we used extra material or less material. The variations in the cost are the amenities we would add to the project. Sidewalk, curb and gutter, which is something we would do similarly in a valley neighborhood or a downtown neighborhood that didn't have those amenities but already had a paved neighborhood. It's the way we've done it, so when we go through and rebuild a section of road that needs water, sewer, and new pavement, we'll typically put in underground drainage, curb, gutter, and sidewalk at no cost to the neighborhood because they're upgrades in their current standards. So the 30% is based on only that section of pavement and the roads. The rest of the amenities add on to that. And so that's where the 3,800 comes from, is roughly a 30% split with the neighborhood.
I guess I don't have any more questions about this. This has probably been through committee, and this may be a Board of Equalization, not an assembly meeting, but it just seems that, you know, we're sort of in a pickle on both, you know, CIP projects and our budget. You know, we just spent a time on tax thing about inflation costs on tax exemptions, and, you know, if the assembly had done inflation on some of this stuff, maybe it'd be cost prohibitive at this point. But anyway, I'll hold my issues for finance committee discussions, I think, at this point.
Or it could go back to Public Works, too, or one of those committees to discuss and debate whether it should be more or less. That's where it all came from to begin with. So.
Yeah, and I understand the 70-30 split. My math shows it's 12%, but anyway. I'll hold my comments, but it was, I guess, a good lesson for me as a newbie.
Okay. Maria?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So did this go through Public Works?
Yes. Okay. Anything else? Ms. Gray.
Just a comment. I think that we need to bring this subject back up when we start taking a look at the new subdivision rules as well.
Yeah. Can be looked at by the assembly. We're the one that set the rates. We can change the rates for sure. And all the pros and cons with that.
Well, Mr. Mayor, if I might, if in fact we did, as Mr. Bohan said, the assembly at some point set the rules, then maybe for the majority of us that weren't there 12 or 15 years ago, maybe when they bring these LIDs, they explain how they reached that dollar amount, what the assembly rules were, what the committee minutes were, how they reached that discussion, because it would be a lot easier for us to have the discussion in Public Works than to have this discussion during the LID after the property owners have already accepted. And I, you know, I don't want to hold that up, but it would be really nice to have that kind of issue explained to us when we're trying to work it through a committee. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, and that's good. And I think that it probably was at Public Works explained more in depth than what we got here, but everybody didn't get it for sure. You're right, Mr. Jones. Okay, so what I need, if there's no other comments or questions about this, I need a recommendation to the assembly that we approve the assessment rolls with there's no revisions or corrections, and we recommend it from the Board of Equalization. So if I can have that, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the Board of Equalization forward serial number ordinance or resolution serial number 2717 covering LID number 60 and serial number 2715 covering LID number 96 forward to the assembly for approval.
Thank you very much. Are there any objections? That is done. And then we will take this up as we do the next part of our agenda under the consent agenda. That's where it is. So if it passes through the consent agenda, then it's passed. Everybody understand that? Okay. Now we move on to approval.
Now you have to adjourn.
Oh, yes.
Sorry.
I adjourn from the Board of Equalization and reconvene. Thank you. We'll move on to approval of minutes. The February 19, 2015 Special Assembly Meeting 2015-03. Are there any corrections to those minutes? Hearing and seeing none, they're so ordered. The February 23rd, we pulled for corrections. And we'll move on to March 2nd, 2015, Special Assembly Meeting 2015-05. Are there any corrections to those minutes? Seeing, hearing none, so ordered. Manager's request for any other agenda changes?
None, thank you.
And now we go into public participation on non-agenda items. I have three people who want to talk to us about one of our ordinances that we have on the deal. When we get to that ordinance, then you'll be able to speak. So this part of the assembly meeting is about non-agenda items. Is there anybody in the public who wishes to speak to us on a non-agenda item? Is this a one for public hearing?
Yeah, so that's the only other person who signed up.
Okay. And we already pulled that one.
Right. Okay.
Mr. Clark, are you still here?
No.
No, he's gone. Okay, good. That takes care of that piece of paper. Consent agenda. Madam Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move we adopt the consent agenda and ask for unanimous consent.
I'm sorry. We have a couple of changes here, too. So, Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think you need to request if anybody in the public wants any of the issues pulled before the Assembly acts. But I will ask from the Assembly that we pull Resolution 2718. Resolution reestablishing the Juneau Commission on Sustainability. The HRC met and we have a specific amendment.
Thank you. Anything else here? Madam Manager, anything else here on the consent agenda? Okay, we'll move on to assembly action.
Public requests.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to speak on any of our poll? Any of the agenda items for the consent agenda, which is the first part of our agenda. Seeing none, public comment is closed. Now, Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move we adopt the consent agenda with the elimination to be pulled, anyway, to pull for further discussion 2718 and ask for unanimous consent.
Thank you. Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. And we'll move to ordinance 2718 first.
Resolution.
It's you. Resolution?
No. We might in a version B.
Madam Manager.
It's just introduced. For
Madam Clerk.
Thank you. Resolution 2718, a resolution reestablishing the Juneau Commission on Sustainability and repealing Resolution 2528.
Thank you. Madam Manager.
The purpose of this resolution is to amend the quorum requirements for the Juneau Commission on Sustainability. Currently, the Planning Commission and Assembly members count towards determining a quorum of the Commission. This amendment to the Commission's governing legislation would reclassify the Planning Commission and Assembly members as liaisons and would specify that the two are not to be counted in determining whether a quorum of the Commission is present. I recommend this resolution be adopted.
Is there anybody from the public who wishes to comment on this resolution? Seeing none, public comment is closed. I'll move forward. I think there's amendment here. You want to move the resolution and then amend?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move resolution serial number 2718, and I have a specific amendment.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, go ahead.
On page 2, section 2, titled Composition. This doesn't change any of the motion, but the HRC committee wants this specific amendment. Second line after the word assembly, remove the comma and put in a period. In the next sentence, delete the word plus and start that in addition, one liaison from the assembly and one from the planning commission shall be designated, period. So after, if this is accepted, this first two sentences would read, the commission shall be comprised of 7 members appointed by the assembly, period. In addition, one liaison from the assembly and one from the planning commission shall be designated, period. And I would move the amendment.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, is there any objections to that amendment? Hearing none, so ordered. And
I would ask unanimous consent on approving serial number 2718 as amended.
Is there any objections to that motion? So ordered. Okay, we'll move forward to public hearing. Madam Clerk, could you please read the title of the first ordinance?
Ordinance 2015-11, an ordinance amending ordinance serial number 2014-01 regarding the second series of port revenue bonds authorized thereunder.
Administration report.
This ordinance amends ordinance 2014-01 adopted on January 6, 2014. Authorizing the issuance of not to exceed $29 million of port revenue bonds. The purpose of the bonds is to fund the cruise ship dock expansion and a portion of the Seawalk. This amendment is necessary to update the principal maturity schedule in Section 5. The revised schedule allows the issuance of a 19-year bond versus the original plan of 25-year bonds. CBJ has already sold $6.055 million of a 25-year revenue bonds on February 20, 2015 to provide portion of the project. The remaining $22.9 million of bonds are scheduled to be sold May 7, 2015 and will have a 19-year maturity span. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. I will open up for public comment. Ordinance 2015-11. Does anybody from the public wish to comment on this ordinance? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Assembly action. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move the Assembly approve Ordinance 2015-11, and I have a couple of questions.
Go ahead, Mr. Jones.
Thank you. In the printed agenda, it says the bonds are to be sold April 22nd. I think the manager said May 7th.
That has been changed.
Which is correct.
May 7th.
May 7th, okay. And then my second question is, why 19 years and not 25? That's not explained in the narrative. No.
And I will look to the finance director, Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jones, the ability to shorten it from 25 to 19 years was just based on the pledged revenues, which is the annual port development fees that are collected through docks and harbors. And when we originally set the 25-year term, we thought we were going to be issuing a total bond package of $36 million. Now the total package, including what's already been sold for the Seawalk, what's proposed to be sold here, is $29 million. So the fact that we're going to be selling less bonds, we have less debt that has to be paid back, so we can have a little bit higher annual payments. So it allows us to shorten the time frame, and it saves about $1.5 million of interest expense that we would have to pay if we were using longer bonds.
Mr. Jones?
Thanks. That's helpful. I was hoping that was going to be the answer, but it wasn't in the narrative, so I had to ask. And my last question is, these are paid, the bonds are being paid from the, I guess they're not part of the debt service as part of the mill rate. They're being paid by revenues from docks and harbors and port fees. Is that correct?
That is correct. The revenue source that's being pledged is specifically the port development fee, which is collected by the docks, and it's basically $3 per passenger.
And those fees will be enough to shorten the payment down while increasing the overall payment in those years?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bartholomew, I missed something basic, and I apologize. I'm looking at page 2 of the proposed ordinance, and I'm seeing maturity dates, principal amounts of maturity dates into 2039, which is somewhat more than 19 years from now. Help me understand how we're going to 19 years.
Correct. So this is the second phase of the bond sale. So the first phase was $6 million of bonds for the Seawalk portion, and that's the part that's already been built out towards the Princess Dock. When you look at the maturity schedule on page 2, those payments that are happening in 2035 through 2039 are related to the bonds that we've already sold. So those payments will be on 25-year maturity. If you look at the numbers that are being deleted, which would have been the prior maturity schedule, if we would have sold this additional amount of money over 25 years. So you can see that in those last 5 years, we've dramatically decreased the payments, and that's because we've shortened this second phase to 19 years.
Okay, so make sure I understand, just to follow up, that the tranche we've already sold has some maturities that go out to 25 years.
Correct.
The next one we're going to sell doesn't.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Hearing none. We have a motion on the floor. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, and I would ask unanimous consent. I remove my objections.
Thank you. Is there any objections to Ordinance 2015-11? Seeing none, so ordered. Madam Clerk, could you please read the title for Ordinance 2015-12?
An ordinance amending the land use code relating to wireless communication facilities.
Administrative report.
Wireless communication facilities are regulated by federal law and by the City and Borough of Juneau in Title 4965-900 through 1030. On January 8, 2015, the Federal Communications Commission published new federal WCF laws, which take effect on April 8, 2015. As of that date, local governments will be required to approve certain types of co-location applications, eligible facility requests, within 60 days of initial application. The new law also defines certain terms that were previously undefined by the FCC. The new federal laws do not affect public notice and do not affect the wireless communication facilities that require a special use permit. This ordinance would amend Title 49 to be consistent with the new federal laws. The Planning Commission reviewed the ordinance at its January 27th and February 10th, 2015 meetings and recommended forwarding it to the Assembly for approval. This ordinance includes all changes approved by the Planning Commission. I recommend adoption of this ordinance.
Thank you, Madam Manager. I will open this up for public comment. So if anybody from the public wishes to give us comment on Ordinance 2015-12, you're more than welcome to come up. Seeing none, public comment is closed. Assembly action. Ms. Crane.
I would move adoption of Ordinance 2015-12 and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? Mr. Nankervis.
Mr. Mayor, no objection. A question for clarification.
Go ahead.
If I may. Through law. I looked at all the strike-throughs. It reads entirely differently to me than the original one. So I'm having a little trouble getting around it. What I would like to know from you is we haven't changed anything unintentionally with all of these changes, have we? We haven't made a mistake and done something we shouldn't have because it took us forever to get that first one done.
No, all we have done, the new federal law did things like further define what an eligible facility is for purposes of that short clock rule. It defined what a substantial change is. It changed that shot clock rule and shortened the timeline within which we must approve. It took away some of our discretion. All this does is make us now compliant with the new federal rules.
Okay. Thank you. I do not have an objection. I just wanted to be certain of that. Thank you.
Is there any objections to Ordinance 2015-12? Hearing and seeing none. It passes. We'll move forward with Madam Clerk, Ordinance 2015-13.
An ordinance amending the comprehensive plan by adopting the Off Bay Area Plan.
Thank you. Madam Manager.
This ordinance would adopt the Ock Bay Area Plan and amend the CBJ's comprehensive plan to include the Ock Bay Area Plan. On February 9, 2015, the plan was presented to the Committee of the Whole, and on February 10, 2015, the Planning Commission voted to recommend to the Assembly adoption of this plan. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to speak to serial number 2015-13? Is there anybody else who hasn't signed up for this ordinance? Go ahead.
Madam, I'm John Pugh, the Chancellor of the University of Alaska Southeast, and my main reason for coming forward is just to thank Hal Hart and his planning staff on working on the Ock Bay plan. There was a tremendous amount of work put in, as well as the citizens of the Ock Bay area. A lot of people in that area put in hours and hours looking at this plan and making recommendations, and I would just say it was a tremendous public process that I was proud that our university was part of. So I just wanted you to know that before the adoption.
All right. Thank you very much, John. Any questions for Mr. Pugh? Seeing none. Is there any objections to public comment? Any other public comments? I will close public comment, and we'll move forward to assembly action. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of Ordinance 2015-13, and I would ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objections? So ordered. Madam Clerk, could you please read the title for Ordinance 2015-14?
An ordinance amending the Penal Code fine schedule relating to off-site commercial solicitation.
Thank you. Administrative report, Madam Manager.
Currently, violations of CBJ 4920-2010 are punishable by a fine of $150. This ordinance would amend the fine schedule to the following graduated schedule: $150 for the first offense, $300 for the second offense in 2 years, and a mandatory court appearance for the third offense in 2 years. JPD was approached by several businesses in the downtown area complaining of ongoing off-site commercial solicitation or hawking issues. It has become apparent that given the amount of profit involved in the sale of merchandise in the downtown area, a small fine is not sufficient to deter illegal hawking. This ordinance would increase the fine and culminate in a mandatory court appearance for repeat offenders in an effort to encourage voluntary compliance. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. And I will open this up for public comment, and we have three people who wish to testify on this ordinance. So, Ms. Christy Shabria. And just give me your name and address, and then you can say your piece.
Okay. My name is Christy Shabria. Our business is on Franklin, but we reside at Park Shore. And my husband and I are new business owners. He's been in the industry for 15 years, in the tourist, in both Caribbean and Alaska. I'm kind of new to it, but I can tell you just from experience how much we support this. I'm probably not going to say the right words, but mainly coming from customers, being customer service oriented and people who dream of coming to Alaska, they love the opportunity to come and they just hate being harassed. And knowing a lot of the other owners in the industry, it's kind of hard because some of them just kind of think it's a joke. They are allowed to do this hawking, or we call barking, down in the Caribbean or where they may have other businesses. My husband and I are locally owned, and we are here year round. Made it our home and made it our one business, but it does make it hard for us not to toot our own horn, but because we don't do the barking and the hawking, it's actually helped us. Customers will come back after walking down and come back and say, we just love you. You guys aren't out there harassing us, trying to pull us in. I mean, some people physically try to pull some of our customers in, and it's just very hard and frustrating for them. And they said, if I wanted that, I would have gone down to St. Thomas or, you know, an island where you got hundreds and hundreds of jewelry stores, and they just want a piece of Alaska, and they don't want that extra harassment. And so we are a locally owned business, and we support the fines imposed. My husband, being in the industry, he could probably attest, he's been a barker before. He's been, you know, he started at the bottom and now is an owner, and he's seen, I won't lie, benefits and disadvantages to barking. But whereas we're a city that doesn't allow that, that doesn't focus on that type of soliciting to our customers who want to just come and experience Alaska, I just find it really important to really encourage and not allow it in Juneau. So that way our visitors who come to Alaska, which for a lot of them is a one-time dream come true, can actually enjoy their visit and not feel pressured and pushed into things that they don't want. So.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Cabrillo. Does any questions for Ms. Cabrillo? Thank you very much. Canaz Cabrillo.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, and good evening, everybody. My name is Kunal Chabria, and together with my wife, Christy and Chabria, we own Jules Bakeris at 439 South Franklin Street. When we first signed our lease with our neighbor and the building owners, Celebrity Jewelers, we had a mutual understanding that we will not be hawking, and we will not be, you know, soliciting and, you know, inviting customers in by standing outside our door. And we kept up to our promise. But during the course of the five-month season, you know, we have a very short duration over here in Alaska. It's not a year-round business. With 1 million tourists that visit us during those 5 months, it's very hard for us in those 5 months to cover our rents, salaries, pay taxes, and all the other ongoing expenses. We believe in fair trade. And as my wife mentioned earlier, you know, with all this harassment that's going on, our customers come and tell us, this is Mexico. Like, you know, when you go down to Mexico, you get harassed, you get pulled in all those stores over there. But that's how it feels like over here in downtown Juneau. We've come up with a list of 7 stores who are actively hawking on an everyday basis in Juneau, be it one ship or 5 ships. And we, according with our neighbors, have called on Juneau Police Department pretty much 2 to 3 times every day. And most of the times they have been they've showed up, and even they've been short-staffed during the summer months. And, you know, they've come and they've also fined some of these hawkers. And what happens is these businesses, they move these hawkers over to their next port because they're multi-port businesses from Juneau to Skagway to Ketchikan, and they continue the same thing over there. These fines that we are, you know, imposing on them are very limited. Imagine pulling one customer in and making a $10,000 sale, and you're only fining them $150, $200. They're laughing. They're like, you know, it doesn't cost them anything to get that sale in. And more than that, it also affects our business as well, because customers see our shopping bags. They see our business card. Customers are walking with them. They see, oh, you went to Jules by Chris? Come on in. I have a better price. Let me undercut you. Let me do this. We are honest business people. We pay our sales tax, and we don't know how they operate. But it's a shame to, you know, be in a street where all this is happening on an everyday basis.
All right. Any questions? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Chad Samantani.
Good evening. My name is Chad Samantani, and I represent Celebrity Jewelers. We have two stores in South Franklin Street. And like what Kunal and Christy have said, they've basically covered what I want to say and about the harassment and all that. And just want to bring up one point, very important point. I feel that, you know, being locals over here, we are locally owned and operated. What we make over here is we spend it over here in the community, paying our taxes on time, abiding by the law, and, you know, which is the right way to do business, which is the right way to live over here. Whereas the other people, the competitors, and also those who hawk, God knows what they do, how they do it, and whether they pay their taxes on time or how much they pay, we don't know. I don't want to say much about that because I do not see what exactly they're doing. So therefore, we would really appreciate the help and the basically the law to impose on stricter penalties when necessary. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Samantani? Thank you very much, sir. Is there anybody else who wishes to comment on Ordinance 2015-14? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Madam Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move Ordinance 2015-14, and I would like to ask a question or two.
Go ahead.
Thank you. This is commercial solicitation, as they spoke, that someone standing outside their door and asking you to come in. What about the person who's on the street just asking for money and or has a little trinket they want to just sell on the street? They really don't have a license. They're just there, and we know we have some people who do that. Does this cover those people?
Sidewalk solicitation and sidewalk vending, you are required to have a license to do that. That's different from panhandling, which is covered somewhere different, which we can't prohibit outright, but we can put limitations on. But you are supposed to have a sidewalk vending license in order to sell things on the sidewalk.
But panhandling.
Panhandling
is
different.
Not this, and it's not covered. We don't have that covered.
Panhandling is not commercial solicitation.
But excuse me, if yeah. I could, it is in the ordinance
right.
on the table on the second.
It because it is covered in a different ordinance.
Okay.
In a separate ordinance.
Yes.
Okay. Anything else? Ms. Becker?
Thank you.
Ms. White?
Yes. Thank you. I just had a quick question. Just for Lot, do you think that this fine schedule is adequate? I know that I travel overseas occasionally, and the hawking is very intimidating and strong, and that's not the image I want to see people have when they come to our town. Is this enough?
I dealt with this issue when I was in private practice and we were representing Skagway. They had they were called the Tijuana of Southeast because of a serious problem that they had with hawking. They have a very short business corridor. They did not, my recollection was a long time ago, was that the fine schedule itself was not enough, but what Skagway had in addition to the fine schedule was they had business licenses, and so in addition to being fined, the business license was at risk, and that was one way that they really addressed this problem. I don't know if the graduated fine schedule is enough to stem the problem. It's something that we can try. Certainly the mandatory court appearance is more difficult, but what I just heard was that there is a practice in place where the vendors will have someone outside hawking and then send them to a different port, which means that the next person that goes out hawking is going to start at the $150 level. So I'm not certain how we address that. I don't know that that's been addressed. I haven't looked.
Ms. White, go ahead.
But so if this doesn't work, we could come back later and maybe put it against the business or as something in addition to the sales tax collected or somehow fine them rather than the individual?
If this doesn't work, we can look at alternatives,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank
Ms. Balaczewski?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This was just amending the penalties, but the definition of off-site commercial solicitation is what? How do you?
It is, I'm not going to remember it off the top of my head, but basically it is, Mr. Keel has it.
Keel has it up.
It's ready to read it.
Mm-hmm. he could be ready to read it.
Thank you, Mr.
Ready
Keel.
Is a funny word.
Mr. Keel, go ahead.
The definition, I won't read the entire ordinance, but for purposes of this section, off-site commercial solicitation is defined as person-to-person efforts solely intended to interest pedestrians in or to solicit the participation of pedestrians in commercial transactions for private profit with a business, except when done entirely within an enclosed structure.
Thank you.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess along the same lines as Ms. White's question, does the person-to-person portion of that section prohibit us, or maybe the its existence in the penal code, prohibit us from citing the corporate person engaging in the solicitation, or does it have to be the natural person we're citing?
There may be a way for us to create a civil fine for separate from a criminal penalty, but a civil fine that attaches to the business. And I'll need to look into that. But there is a way to do that. That is what we did in Skagway.
Okay, so I guess I would endorse this as a first step and hope it works without having to come back and do those other things. But they might be necessary.
Ms. Crane.
Of course, the key to this working is whether the police are going to have the time to be able to deal with this situation. And I know we have Lieutenant Sell back there, and I'm wondering if she'd like to comment on that.
I'm sure she'd love to.
We didn't have to stretch her too hard.
I'm Lieutenant Chris Sell. I don't fit in this chair very well.
Are you wearing
I made a little rhyme there.
Because of the gear on.
Sorry, I'll be here all week.
RoboCop.
Yes, we will have the resources to address this. We have filled both downtown officer positions. We have a part-time officer who had retired from full-time work who will be downtown. And the CSOs were very excited about their undercover work last summer that we only were able to do for one day, but almost all the citations were written in one day. So they're ironing their shorts and they're getting ready.
Mr. Jones.
Excellent.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Sometime back, I guess, through Docks and Harbors, yeah, there was an ordinance that was proposed, and I thought there was sort of a similar situation, but as Mr. Keel read that particular ordinance, but we currently have a prohibition, I guess, against a tour vendor that hasn't bought a booth down on the dock and doesn't have a storefront business from offering to take people on a tour. Taxis can't solicit in the downtown area. Is that covered under this ordinance? Is that part of the same definition, or is there a different definition of that commercial solicitation versus this commercial solicitation?
So that is covered in the waterfront sales, the waterfront sales permits. So it is a permit condition, and the vendors are subject to losing their permits if they violate the permit condition that they not engage in hawking. That is not covered under this ordinance. Because you can solicit sales from your tour booth. That's the whole purpose of the tour booth, and you're outside and you're not in an enclosed area. So you're technically violating this ordinance. The permit gives you the right to do that unless you're doing it in a way that violates the permit conditions.
But isn't it also that if I'm licensed as a tour, you know, I can take people for hire, but I don't rent a booth and I park at the Jack and tourists walk by, I can ask them if they want a tour. But if I stand by the Triangle and ask tourists who walk by if they want to take a tour, then I violate the law. Is that correct?
It's a permit condition of the CPV permits. The CPV regulations is where it lives. Is that true? I think that's true. It's in the CPV regulations that it gives the certain commercial passenger vehicles the right to vend their tours in certain areas.
Okay. So if I operate a whale watch but I don't buy the permit from Docks and Harbors and I don't have a booth down here, and I somehow talk to tourists in the downtown area, I can't do that. But if I talk to people down the Willoughby District around Foodland and about a whale tour, I can do that. Is that correct?
Yes.
But that's totally different than standing out in front of my own shops saying, you know, come in to my shop.
So our ordinance is limited in location. The basis for the ordinance was to address a particular problem that we had downtown, which is why it's not a borough-wide problem that we've experienced, which is why this ordinance passes muster. This situation has been litigated and reviewed by the Supreme Court, and what the authority of the city is to address identified problems with this particular issue. So this hawking or commercial or the Tijuanaization of your community. And we had a problem in the historic district and in certain areas identified by the ordinance, and that's why it's limited to those areas.
If I might.
Mr. Jones.
So if I'm a store owner and I try in various ways to entice people into my store, if I do it in a way that's not considered hawking or trying to think what the other term was.
Barking.
Barking, yes. Well, I kept thinking of busting, and in subways and metros, they talk about busting, you know, where they put out the thing and they do the violin. So if I did bright neon signs or I did loud music or I did anything else that might entice somebody to walk in my door, that's okay. But if I stand in front of my door, you know, and say, hey, come on in here, then I'm in violation of the ordinance. So, but I'm not if I otherwise advertise it, do loud music, whatever.
Well, you might be in violation of the Disturbing the Peace Ordinance. Again, we also have sign regulations. But if you were otherwise in compliance with the law, then that's correct. Because, again, remember, we cannot ban commercial speech. We can regulate it as to time, place, and manner. So we're limited in how we can regulate in a way that prohibits commercial speech. So this ordinance is tied to commercial speech, and it's tied to a particular location and a type of commercial speech without regulating the speech itself. So, yes, if you are otherwise in compliance with all of our other laws and you are trying to entice people to come into your store, as long as you are not doing it in a way that violates this ordinance, you can be as obnoxious as you like.
So, if I was a vendor and I wanted to continue to violate the law, and I think as the example was presented, if I could sell somebody a $10,000 piece of jewelry and I had to pay a $150 fine and $200 fine and then a $300 fine, but I didn't have to pay a lawyer to fight you and argue over all these finer points, you know, then I could keep on doing that, keep on paying the fine, and hopefully keep on selling enough jewelry to pay the fine and make a profit. And all we can do is fine them. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Well, the third violation results in a mandatory court appearance, which is not limited to a $300 fine. I'm trying to remember what the current amount for an infraction is, if it's been raised to $5,000. It just was raised again. I don't remember, but it's some multiple of thousands of dollars. And we could ask for other provisions, but if your question is, are we limited in by imposing a monetary penalty, yes.
And as Mr. Keel, I think, hinted, that this is person to person. So if every week they change who's hawking, we're still at $100.
Yep.
One of the reasons why Skagway tied this to a business license.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You had previously said tying it to a business license. That's not a monetary fine. That's something else.
That's the
so there is another avenue besides this one.
Yes.
Well, we don't issue business licenses. No. Right.
Exactly. Well, yeah, there is an avenue to do that, but we do not do that at this time.
And there is a sign ordinance issue. I recall some number of years ago there was bubbles and banners and emitting things from a business that was
and sandwich boards
that
on the
was
sidewalk
prohibited by the sign ordinance.
Yeah.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would just point out, since not to go through a whole lot more reading, but A4 of the ordinance, in addition to making the violation of this section an infraction, reads, in addition, the municipality may bring suit for injunctive relief where warranted. And I would suggest that if these increased fines don't do the job, we might do better to go down some of the other avenues, because I think civil lawsuits for injunctions are probably pretty spendy. But clearly, if somebody's a habitual violator and a frequent bad actor, there is another option in the existing ordinance that we could try.
And the way that would work would be bringing the injunction, asking for a court order, having them violated again, and try to get a monetary penalty of some sort. But yes.
Ms. Kletchewski?
I was just going to, are you ready for a motion, Mr. Mayor?
I see one more hand down.
Here's
this
open.
Way. So
we already made a motion.
Yeah, we already have a motion. So.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Ms. White?
Thank you. Is there a way for us to make it clear to these business owners that if we pass this, we are not ready for South Franklin Street to be the gauntlet of, say, the San Jose del Cabo Airport, and that we won't stand for it, and we will go back and revisit this issue? Is there a way to get that message across gently?
I can speak for the enforcement agents, citations, because in addition to giving tickets, they give a lot of warnings. Often warnings will work with people who have accidentally gotten caught up in trying to sell. Maybe they're naive about the rules. Last year was when we saw what appeared to be our first professional barker brought in from out of town, and very good and very aggressive. And he was cited twice, and did comment that it's just a cost of doing business, as long as he didn't have to go to court and take that time away from the day. So we are specifically tailoring this to send just that message, that this is not going to become a professional barking area. And we'll continue to let the business owners know, because we've heard rumor of more professional barkers coming in this year, that we will talk to the business owners, that we will have to start looking at different tactics if they can't comply with what we'd like to see on the streets.
Okay, I have no doubt that You can be effective.
I can be very grumpy. I'll get my frowny face.
Okay. I think that we've had a good discussion on this thing, and we can change things as we move forward. If this does not work, we can do other things to make it better, and I'm sure that we'll walk down that path. So is there any objections to serial number 2015-14 passing? Hearing none, so ordered. You already got up. I was going to say, be careful getting up.
I don't know
up.
If I can sit back down.
No,
yes,
you're good.
Oh, no.
I wanted to make sure you weren't setting anything off. Okay. So we'll move on to ordinance serial number 2015-15, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance approving the city and borough's participation in a proposed refinancing by the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank of the bond bank's general obligation bonds that provided funds to purchase the Harbor Revenue Bond 2007 of the city and borough under a loan agreement between the city and borough and the bond bank, and authorizing a revised schedule of principal and interest payments on the city and borough's 2007 bond. In accordance with the loan agreement, if the bond bank successfully refinances its bonds.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Could you tell us what you said?
What the paper said.
Administrative report, please, Madam Manager.
This ordinance would authorize the participation in the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank's exchange, refunding or refinancing of the 2007 Harbor Revenue Bonds. The original $11 million in bond proceeds were sold June 25, 2007. The original bonds were sold through the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank. The current total remaining debt service, bonds, and interest is $13.4 million. If CBJ issues the refunding bonds in May, we've revised that date, 2015, the total remaining bond debt payments will be $12.9 million, resulting in an estimated total savings of $500,000 over the remaining life of the bonds. The term of the new issue will be the same as the original final payment, February 2033. The total remaining debt service payments would be paid for out of the Harbor Operations Fund. An interest rate resolution will be brought forward to the Assembly at its April 27th Assembly meeting. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. I will open this up for public comment. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to comment on Ordinance 2015-15? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Assembly action. Mr. Nan Curvis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move adoption of Ordinance 2015-15 and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objections? Mr. Jones?
No.
Question? I'll give you a chance.
I'll ask about this one at the next one.
Okay. Serial number 2015-15 has been approved. Madam Clerk, Ordinance 2015-16.
An ordinance providing for the issuance and sale of a general obligation school refunding bond in the aggregate principal amount of not to exceed $3,400,000 and providing the form and terms of the bond and for unlimited tax levies to pay the bond.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Madam Manager.
This ordinance would authorize the issuance of up to $3.4 million in bonds to refund the 2005A general obligation school bonds. The original $9.5 million in bonds were sold March 1, 2005. The bonds were sold directly into the market by CBJ, but the refunding is being done through the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank. The amount being refunded is $3.3 million plus issuance costs. If CBJ issues the refund bonds, also changing the date to May of 2015, the refunding will result in an estimated total savings of $225,000 over the remaining life of the bonds. The term of the new issuance will be the same as the original final payment, February 2020. These bonds qualify for 70% reimbursement under the state school's construction bond debt reimbursement program. However, the reimbursement under the state debt reimbursement program is subject to an annual appropriation by the legislature. The debt service component of the property tax mill rate funds the remaining portion of the payment. An interest rate an interest rate resolution will be before the Assembly at the April 27th Assembly meeting. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. I would open this up for public comment. Is there anybody in the public who wishes to comment on Ordinance 2015-16? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move the Assembly approve Ordinance Serial Number 2015-16, but I have a couple of questions.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Go ahead.
So these are school bonds, so they are reimbursable at 70% if the legislature. So does the legislature annually appropriate money for the bond issues throughout the life of the bond? Or do they do it all at one time or only at the end?
The chair, Mr. Jones, so in the state's annual operating budget, they appropriate 1 year's worth of debt service for all of the school bonds where they've committed to share in the reimbursement or the payment of the debt. So it's an annual appropriation, and they could not do that in any year. But so far, where they've committed to reimburse local governments for bond debt, they have fulfilled that commitment.
Mike, Mr. Mayor.
That'd be it.
So,
Mr. Jones.
So basically, the remaining payments and the $3.3 million that's there, that's assuming we're not going to get any reimbursement back from the state. And each year, the amount we pay of that debt would be decreased by what we might get reimbursed for from the state.
Correct. The total outstanding debt service is between $3 and $4 million. We make the payments, and our bond payments are twice a year. Within 3 to 4 weeks after we make the payments, we submit reimbursement to the Department of Education. They have already had appropriated. So for this year, they have a FY15 operating budget that was approved by the legislature. And then we normally get reimbursed within a matter of weeks after we submit our claim. And so that'll happen again with what's going on with the legislature now. If they adopt it in their FY16 budget, we would be covered. If they chose not to fund that, then that would fall onto us. And that's not currently projected in our debt service schedules that we'll be bringing forth with our operating budget. But
Mr. Jones, go ahead.
Okay, final question, and maybe I won't expect an answer tonight, but maybe during the finance discussion or you and I need to talk or something. But the previous ordinance we just approved, that was coming out of the Harbor Development Fund. So if we save any money, that savings is realized in the Harbor Development Fund. If we realize savings here, then theoretically that's part of the debt service on the mill rate that for which there's no expenditure, but we will have collected the property tax. So where does that show up in the budget? And if in fact you both save on the interest rate and get reimbursed by the state, but we've already set the mill rate that year and collected it, is that just become part of the fund balance for the next year because we didn't have to pay as much of our own money out for the debt service?
So how it would work is we do calculate how much the mill rate should be for debt service on an annual basis. So we're currently estimating the FY16 amount, and it does not include this savings. So 30% of the estimated savings that's in here for 1 year would be in the proposed mill rate. If we did not have to pay that, you know, $20,000 in debt service, it would not go back to the general fund. It would stay into the debt service fund, and we could have that affect the mill rate for next year. So we would carry it forward. We track the property tax component of the mill rate. So you would benefit in it in our FY17 mill rate from that savings.
another education for me at the Finance Committee during this next 3 months. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You're getting way too many questions, Mr. Jones. On
well, you know, it's taken me 2 years to learn enough to ask the right questions, maybe. But I'm getting there.
Good. Mr. Keel.
Let me see if I can ask the wrong one. Mr. Bartholomew, a difference on this set of bonds from the others, these bonds were sold directly into the market by CBJ. We used our own credit rating. We issued our own bonds. But the refunding is being done through the Municipal Bond Bank Authority. What are the mechanics of that? Are they purchasing the bonds and retiring the debt? Are we just when they sell the refunding bonds, are we going to get a lump of cash and go call our bonds?
Right.
Trace the money for me.
Yeah. Mechanically, when we sell these, there will be a custodian bank involved in the proceeds, and all of the bonds that are a portion of this school debt are eligible to be called, so there's no delay. So the proceeds, the bond bank will be buying the new debt from the City and Borough of Juneau, but they will not pay the City and Borough of Juneau. They'll pay the custodian bank, who will then retire our existing debt, and they've been the ones paying the interest payments to those bondholders. And so they will call those, and then the Municipal Bond Bank will sell new bonds into the market. And that's how they will replenish their funds. So CBJ really won't see any of the cash flow directly into our treasury, but it will go to the custodian bank to retire the existing debt, and then the bond bank will then resell their bonds.
I'm really glad I don't have to do the financial reporting on that. Thank you.
Our accountants are not very happy with
that. Okay, any other questions? We have a motion before us to accept ordinance 2015-16. Is there any objections? Hearing, seeing none, so ordered. Madam Clerk, please read the title for Ordinance 2014-24AB.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $500,000 as a transfer to the Capital Transit Maintenance Shop Capital Project. Funding provided by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and Fleet Replacement Reserve Fund Balance.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Madam Manager.
Capital Transit has a $400,000 equipment grant from the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities that was previously appropriated with Ordinance 2012-20G into the Fleet Reserve. The grant is for the purchase and installation of lifts and bus washing equipment. There is an additional $100,000 in the Fleet Reserve that is a match to the grant. To date, there have been $77,289 of expenses incurred in this project. The expenses will be transferred along with the revenue to D71085 Capital Transit Maintenance Shop Capital Improvement Project. These funds can be more efficiently spent and tracked if they are transferred into the Capital Transit Maintenance Shop CIP. The CIP was established as part of the voter-approved package on the October 2012 election. It contains approximately $3 million in bond money. The bond project is slated to provide for additional inside bus storage as well as for other facility and system improvements. The Public Works and Facilities Committee reviewed this request at their February 9, 2015 meeting and forwarded to the full assembly with a recommendation of approval. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. I will open this ordinance up for public comment, Ordinance 2014-24AB. Is there anybody in the public who wishes to comment? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Assembly action. Ms. Gladysetsky.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move serial number 2014-24AB and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Madam Clerk, Ordinance 2014-24AC.
An ordinance reappropriating to the manager the sum of $77,000 from the Lands and Resources Affordable Housing Loans Project that was created with Ordinance Number 2011-11N to the Lands Department Affordable Housing Project, expanding the intended scope to include both grants and loans. funding provided by the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Madam Manager, admin report.
In 2011, the Assembly appropriated a $90,000 grant from the state legislature with Ordinance 2011-11N. The intention of the appropriation was that the grant would be combined with the Juno Affordable Housing Fund to be used for housing loans. The term of the grant agreement includes the wording grants and loans. This ordinance would broaden the scope of the grant through the Assembly. Since 2011, only one $13,000 loan was issued, leaving the balance of the grant at $77,000. The Affordable Housing Commission has spent numerous hours in meetings discussing alternative ways to use the fund to stimulate the housing market. After much consideration, they proposed to use the balance of the state grant, $77,000, for an accessory apartment grant incentive program. The program would provide $5,000 incentive grants to homeowners and builders who complete new accessory apartments. Attached in your packet is the program description written by the Affordable Housing Commission. The accessory apartment grant incentive program and the ordinance was presented to the Lands Committee on January 26, 2015, and they recommended forwarding to the Assembly for approval. I recommend this ordinance and the accessory apartment grant incentive program be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Madam Clerk, is Ms. Troll still with us?
No, we lost her about 7:40.
Okay. I heard it going off and on, but okay, thank you, just so I know. Okay, so I will open this up for public comment. Anybody in the public want to comment on Ordinance 2014-24AC? Ma'am? Good evening. How are you?
I'm Margaret O'Neill. I'm in the Affordable Housing Commission. Russ McDougall is here also on the Affordable Housing Commission. Just want to recommend your approval for this ordinance. We really feel like it's an opportunity to leverage the capital investment power of our homeowners to help solve, create some additional housing units at a very low cost for the community, $5,000 per unit. We think it'll be affordable housing simply because of the size of the accessory apartments.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. O'Neill? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else from the public? Seeing none? Okay. No. Come on up, Russ. Don't be scared of us.
Thank you. I am Russ McDougall, also with the Affordable Housing Commission, and we did labor hard on how to use this money, and we came to this conclusion that this would be the best use of it because we wanted to be able to use the money and not lose it. It was a use it or lose it type of a grant, and so we'd rather see our community have some benefit from this money rather than see it go back to the legislature and then have them think, well, you didn't use that last grant, so we're not going to give you any more grant money along this line. So we're hoping that it will provide additional rental housing and that it would be the best use for the money. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you. Anybody else from the public? I'll close public comment and we'll move forward with assembly action. Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move Ordinance 2014-24-AC and ask for unanimous consent.
I object.
I object. All right. Mr. Jones, you first, then we'll come down to Mr. Keel.
Thank you. I guess the main reason for my objection is that if this is a use it or lose it grant from the state, that generally means that you have to use it for the purpose intended by the state. And I guess I've never had the question answered. Did we change the original intent by making it a loan? Therefore, if the loans had been successful and had been repaid, we would have never spent the money. Or now, if we're turning it into a grant program in order to spend it, are we changing the intent of the legislature without going back to the legislature to have that intent done by them? I'm just, the legality of doing what we're doing is what I'm questioning. Can we, in fact, legally do this
But while Mr. Cheney's walking up here, I can answer the second part. The grant or the approval documents from the state said it could be a grant or a loan. When we first appropriated it, we didn't appropriate it as a grant. We just said loans. But we went back and looked at the actual documentation from the state, and it says it can be a grant or a loan.
If I might then, I just, Mr. for clarification then, if the state said it could be a grant or a loan, then why is the justification for doing it now as a grant is because it's a use it or lose it, and if we don't spend the money, it'll go back to the state. Because a loan, theoretically, is a revolving loan fund, which that principal is never spent. I don't understand.
Whichever one, Mr. Cheney or Madam Manager?
I thought Ms. Kiefer's answer was pretty clear. The state gave it to us, and it could be used for either grants or loans. The ordinance that we adopted it was for a loan program. We're coming back to say we could use it for either loans or grants in this case. We're not changing what the legislature intended. We're just changing how we're going to spend the money or use the money.
Mr. Jones, I think you're not getting through to the point, the bigger point of grants and loans, I think. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if the state says you could use it as a loan, but if you haven't used it in 5 years, we take it back, that doesn't make any sense to me. Because theoretically you wouldn't have spent it all, and part of it is sitting there to be repaid back maybe over a 10-year period. Therefore, the principal amount state remains. So I can understand us saying loans haven't worked to generate the housing. We think grants will. That may be one part, but the justification seems to be if we don't spend it in another year, the legislature is going to take the money back, and that doesn't make sense to me. So I'm still confused. Probably will remain so. Go ahead. So if we did, I guess my basic question is, if this ordinance is not approved, will the legislature take back the money that's not spent?
We have
so when
we have to reapply for this money every year. And they will extend it every year, but it's not a guarantee. And so we make our case. Fortunately, they've extended the use of the money every year. They could stop granting our request to extend. So it's a little different than it's not like they've given it to us and then it'll sit here for a while and then they'll say, oops, we want it back. We have to ask every year. And so far we've been fortunate and they have re-granted it every year. To us.
I have one more question then. If in fact we have to reapply every year, why did we establish a loan program? Because if in fact we had loaned that out and in a year they said no, then we've got a bunch of money out there that we'd have to call in order to pay the money back, right? I mean,
as long as it's involved in a loan, then it can stay for that amount of until the loan's paid back. But if it's fund balance available and we haven't used it, we have to request an extension every year. It's an extension of the program. So that's as I understand it. I mean, there might be people, Bob Bartholomew left. In
my 25 years with the state and having worked for the legislature, I've never heard of such a program. I'm sorry. Maybe Mr. Keel can enlighten me.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't deal in enlightenment, but I have worked with these grants a little bit because I wrote this one for my boss at the time. Had I known that the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development was requiring the city to somehow reapply for a grant every year within the first 5 years of its life, we'd have been on the telephone because that's silly and that's not the rules of the program and that's not the scope of the program. So that's news to me. To Mr. Jones' question about the legality, the title of the appropriation was Lands Department Affordable Housing. Within the scope of that title, we can do what we need to with the money. The intent of the appropriation in the documents that the legislature prepared at the request of CBJ is a little less broad. It's, as you know, always tricky when you write a title. You don't want it to be too tight, but too broad, and you get into trouble as well. The intent of the appropriation of the grant to the city was, in fact, to capitalize a loan fund. And when you look through those documents, it's pretty clear. It's frankly surprising to me that CCED hasn't just dispersed it for capitalization of the fund. Another thing we should maybe talk about. That said, as to the use it or lose it question, this appropriation was made in 2011. So we're still within the five fiscal years before the legislature starts to look at whether appropriation might lapse. And it gives the Department of Commerce the right to extend that administratively a year without coming to the legislature if the project or purpose will be met and the money spent within a year. So really it's six. So we needn't, I think, be in a colossal hurry. I think those are the questions that others had posed and the issues that came up. The reason for my objection is that grant program's not what the money was for. And because we needn't be in a hurry, I think we'd do a whole lot better to wait for our housing action plan, for which I think we're paying $75,000 all by itself, to look at its recommendations for how we might use our affordable housing fund. The loan idea hasn't particularly worked. And I think there are a couple of reasons for that, not the least of which is it takes much bigger loans to provide the gap funding for big projects that was envisioned when we created this thing. But if we just keep spending it, it's all gone. And it doesn't take terribly long for that to happen. But we're paying a set of professionals a significant quantity of money to come up with a housing action plan, and I think there had darn well better be some interesting and good ideas in there. I think that's what we're buying. And so I'm not ready to spend down $77,000 of this account when there isn't a hurry, when the plan's on its way. So that really is the source of my objection, that potentially up to 15 apartments, and that's it, the money's gone for good, doesn't meet the test in my mind.
Anybody else? Madam Becker?
If I just want clarification from Mr. Keel. So basically, if you don't want to do this, you're saying you really don't want to do the accessory apartments either. Did that go together?
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Becker, I guess my concern with the accessory apartment grant straight up is that it spends down the fund. We had looked at some length of an accessory apartment loan program. I understand that the cost of administering that was a barrier. And so I think we should keep our powder dry and, more importantly, our cash in hand until we have either some better ideas or a housing action plan that says, nope, that's the best thing you got going. Hit it. One of the two.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Anybody else? Okay, we have before us Ordinance 2014-24AC, and we have two objections. Objections still on the table?
Yes.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, could you please read the roll?
Mr. Jones?
No.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
No.
Mr. Keel?
No.
Ms. Crane?
No.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Mayor Sanford?
Yes.
Motion's tied. Fails.
All right. Everybody get that out there and public land? The motion fails? Okay. Okay. We'll move forward to the next item on our sheet, which will be to unfinished business. And the item that was there was pulled for to our next meeting. So we'll move forward to new business and liquor licenses. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Human Resources Committee took up the issue of the two licenses that were under review. We were informed during the meeting that all of the obligations of both of these vendors had been met. And so the motion from the HRC is that the Assembly waive its right to protest these two particular liquor licenses. And so I would make that motion on behalf of the Human Resources Committee that we waive our right to protest.
Thank you. Is there any objections to that? Seeing none, so ordered. Okay, we have before us regulation amending Docks and Harbors passenger for hire fee, item B. This can be moved forward with orders of the day. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I ask for orders of the day.
Any objections? So ordered. We'll move forward to item C, regulation amending Docks and Harbors waterfront sales permits. This can be moved forward with orders of the day. Mr. Nankervis.
I would again ask for orders of the day on this.
Thank you, Mr. Is there any objections? So ordered. And then we have request for authorization to negotiate a lease for wireless internet tower. Madam Manager.
Yes, Southeast Alaska Communications Services has submitted an application to lease CBJ lands for a wireless internet communication tower. The proposed tower would enhance SCS's coverage in Juneau. The proposed location is on the Mendenhall Peninsula, where there are currently two existing towers owned by KTO and JPD. The site manager with KTO has indicated there is room on the site for additional tower, and this proposal would not negatively affect existing towers and leases. I ask for direction from the Assembly to approve me to begin negotiations with Southeast Communication Services for the lease of CBJ property. The final lease would come back to the Assembly for final approval.
Thank you. Madam Manager, is there any questions? City Manager? Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to know, these are going to make me nervous now. Does this in any way conflict with our current ordinance doing this? Because it seems to me there was a lot of language in our first ordinance that talks about co-location, and this is putting another tower on us, basically the same pad where we've got our other towers, when it sounds like it was somewhere I read it was like a 20-inch or 30-inch dish or something. That why can't you just strap that to another tower that already sits there? And the way it read, it sounds like if we did this, we were conflicting with our chart of preferences on the original ordinance. So help, please.
Tag team it. So this first request is just to authorize us to negotiate for the property. What they have to do is they will still have to go through the whole, go to the Planning Commission, go through that process, depending on if it's required, depending upon what the changes to the height, and does it qualify, does it have to get a conditional use permit, or how it needs to go forward. But we will require them to go through everything they need to go through with the Planning Commission first and CDD department first before we will then allow them to use our property. So we need to make sure they can get permitted to be able to use it first. So this is just asking to negotiate the property for their use, but we want to make sure that they can actually have the use they want the property before we finalize the agreement.
Because it's the city and borough property?
It's city and borough property. Yes?
Can I jump in? Yeah. So this is the 5309-260 process, because we were we were approached by an individual. This was not property that had been advertised or, you know, put out for auction. This was an entity that approached us and asked us to use our property for a specific purpose. So under 5309-260, it has to come to the assembly with the proposal, and then you decide whether or not you want to allow the manager to begin negotiations of the lease. There's still the entire lease process, and it is separate from the use process and whether there's ultimate approval for the use.
Mr. Mayor, if I could just follow up on that, then I guess there would have to be some sort of clause in this negotiation that says, okay, we will, provided you get past the other barriers.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Jones?
Most of my questions got answered, but the question is, I assume that the KTOO tower is there on a lease? Since it's city rural property?
Yes.
That's the Juno Communication Systems.
Yes.
Okay. That's fine. And is JPD paying us, or are we giving them because they are us?
They are us.
Okay.
They are us.
All right. So if I was SCS and I had gone to KTOO and said, can I put a 30-inch disc on your tower? Then under the wireless ordinance, would that be a substantial change to KTOO's tower, or could they just do it and they wouldn't have to pay any lease? Is that correct?
It does depend what our lease agreement with Juno Communications says, whether they can sublease. But a co-location, it's a separate issue. So the co-location issue, that would likely be a Table 1 eligible facility request, which now is covered under the new rules under federal law, and it would be an approval as long as it met those criteria. But that's separate from whether or not KTOO or JCS can use our leasehold to sublease. I think that's prohibited without agreement from us.
Okay. Thank you.
And during your negotiations, yeah, you're going to make sure that there's not going to be any interference with JPD and fire dispatch, because that's what that site is used for. And I just want to make sure that they're not interfering with that public safety part of us.
Right.
That's important. Somebody else had their hand up down here. Ms. Crane.
Well, I share Mr. Nankervis's concerns. This made me nervous reading this, probably for different reasons. But it says it's anticipated that a light at the top will not be needed. I just want to be sure that when they negotiate, they are following all of the rules that were so hard fought for through the long process we all went through to get the tower. So they're not negotiating any changes in what we have already come up with. They're just negotiating to use borough land.
And they have to have the correct permits to be able to put this in place before they can have use of our land.
Okay, I'm good.
Okay, any objections to the city manager finishing up negotiation and then them getting their approval first before it is finalized?
Did you get a motion?
Did you get a motion?
I don't know if I did or not.
So moved.
Thank you. So moved. Good. That's one way to take care of that. Thank you, Mr. Keel.
Thank you.
Okay. Getting ahead of myself here. We'll move on to item E, which is resolution 2724. Madam Clerk.
A resolution urging the Alaska Legislature to expand Medicaid coverage to improve the health of Alaskans and Alaska's economy.
Thank you. Madam Manager, anything?
This resolution encourages the Alaska Legislature to expand Medicaid coverage. In part, expansion will provide health outcomes by reducing the number of uninsured Alaskans, improve preventative and primary care access, and expand health care coverage to approximately 2,400 Juneau residents. In addition to its projected that Medicaid expansion will bring new federal dollars to Alaska, thus creating new jobs, I recommend the Assembly proceed in accordance with the recommendations of the Assembly Human Resources Committee that reviewed this resolution prior to this meeting.
Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will make the motion to for the Assembly to approve resolution serial number 2724, which was approved from the HRC to send it to the Assembly with the HRC's support and one amendment. And if I might speak to that amendment, down under the 7th, whereas, the end of that sentence, it says payor. That should read patient. P-A-T-I-E-N-T, I believe, if I spell it right. I'm a terrible speller. And with that amendment, the HRC did pass it forward to with support to the Assembly. And so I would make that motion to amend the resolution before we debate the resolution.
I'm sorry, say it one more time.
I just said I would make the amendment to 2724 by changing the word payer to patient.
Thank you. Is there any objections to the amendment? Thank you.
And that I would ask that the Assembly approve the ordinance.
All right. Approve the resolution.
The resolution, yes.
Thank you very much. Is there any objections to the resolution? Seeing none, so ordered. Okay, Alaska Housing Finance had to leave. Or do we have them here? Oh, we've got them here.
Nope.
We
already get them.
Nope. Okay.
Mr. Mayor?
Thank you for your
time. Yes.
Thank you.
Let's take a 5-minute break here for a potty break, please.
Works for me.
I need to stand up.
Just
to stand
up. She's going to beat you in
line. I didn't know what you were trying to do.
If I get behind her, I'm in trouble.
You're listening to the Juneau Assembly meeting here on KTOO Juneau. It's just about 4 minutes before 9 o'clock. They're taking a 5-minute break. We'll listen to some music and be back with them as soon as they are ready to go back into session. Thank you. You're listening to the Juneau Assembly meeting on KTOO. They're taking a little break right now, and we'll be back with them as soon as they come back into regular meeting.
So our next deal is the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation and talking to us about Gastineau Apartment. Ms. Kiefer or Ms. Mead, do you have anything first?
Ms. Mead will introduce our special guest.
Okay.
So Mark Romick is here from Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. If you recall at the last assembly meeting, when we discussed Gastineau Apartments, I explained you are in a position where you have three options at this point. One is a nuisance or regulatory action against the owners for building code violations or nuisance action that we could do ourselves through the court or administratively. And the other option is eminent domain, and that could result two paths. One is where we initiate an eminent domain action and take that process through to the end ourselves, where we are trying to engage with a private developer to use the property for public purpose that we've identified. And the other would be to keep AHFC involved in some way after we initiate an eminent domain process for, with the end goal of having some component be affordable housing, and recognizing that Alaska Housing Finance Corporation brings to us, one, someone who will oversee that RFP process so that we don't have to be involved, and who's a little more fluent in the types of grants and funding that might be available to private developers who are willing to put in affordable housing. And if you also recall, Alaska Housing Finance came back and told us that they were not able to participate in the way that they had originally thought they might be able to, given the condition of the property. And you asked for more information related to what would the package look like that we would have to put together in order to make the Gastineau apartment site attractive to a private developer who is going to use it for some sort of a public purpose specified by us. So Mr. Romick is here to talk to you about that.
Mr. Romick, good evening. Thank you for staying with us this late.
You're welcome. Thanks, Mr. Mayor. And it's great to be back again. I think it was a couple of months ago I was here. Thanks for having sunshine for me. I went through all four seasons yesterday in the space of 30 minutes, so it was fun. I don't really have a lot more to add to what Amy has already told you other than just to kind of give you the perspective of the way that we looked at it. Alaska Housing is an affordable housing developer, and we look at it from the perspective of, you know, building apartments for people at moderate incomes, and that also limits the amount of money that you can charge. And so as a result of that, you know, the debt capacity of a project is small, which means that in order to pay for the development of a project, that means you have to come up with a lot of other sources of subsidy and in order to make the project work. And that's kind of the modeling that we did, and based on the way that we do things to address affordable housing, we just don't have the resources. And quite frankly, we were a little surprised at the condition of the property after our team went through it, because as you can tell from reading the appraisal and the review of the past appraisals and things like that, and all the documentation, the property has gotten steadily worse over time and has become more and more expensive to kind of get to a usable state. And so that's what we looked at. And that's how we came to the conclusion as it relates to our direct involvement as kind of an owner-developer of that property. And then what we did was look at, okay, so what are the other things that you as a community might want to look at to make it more attractive to somebody, a private developer? And I think some of the things, after listening to the hearing, the last hearing, your meeting, I think Amy mentioned a bunch of them. The parking considerations, I know communities want to make sure that people have adequate parking, but parking is very expensive. And so development community usually will come and look for considerations to be given on the amount of parking or kind of parking and that kind of thing, particularly for if they were looking at affordable housing, because although it may not it might be intuitive, but in affordable housing projects, there are far less cars than in regular apartment complexes, and so there's a kind of a standard kind of request to reduce the parking requirement. Another aspect of it is, and I think Amy mentioned this before, that the risk associated with demolition on that project is probably something that most private developers wouldn't want to enter into without some incentives if it was going to be their responsibility. I think from I don't know if you shared with them the final report that we got from Jensen Lorben or not, but Amy, but there is lead-based paint and there's asbestos in the property. And so that adds some complexity to the demolition of the building and the disposal of the materials. And I don't know to the extent that it has lead-based paint and whatnot. We tested for its presence, and it was found in the building. So that means that as long as there's some limits on how much can be in a property before you can dispose of it locally or if you have to send it out. And if you have to send the material out, then it's very expensive. And so that's something that is going to be a big risk for a private developer going forward. The other aspect of things is even if you can get somebody interested in the property with both parking considerations and essentially a flat site delivered, there may be also some tax abatements that are necessary in order to develop that property to what you're interested in having it developed. So although we didn't model the project as strictly a commercial development, I think from looking at the numbers in our assessment, the kind of the easiest thing for the private developer, a private developer would to do would be to use it for primarily commercial use, with maybe some residential on top, condos or more market rate apartments or a combination of market rate apartments and affordable housing, because it's going to be extremely expensive to redevelop that site. And so that's kind of the 35,000 foot level. I could get into a lot of weeds if somebody wants to, but in the interest of time, and the fact that somebody once told me long ago that never tell a person with short hair a long story, I think I'll stop there.
Questions for Mr. Rohr? Mr. Jones.
I don't know if it's a question, but it's come up several times, the issue of potential incentives like tax abatements. And I guess I was under the impression that we're sort of limited by state law on tax abatements. I mean, they passed a bill that we could do tax deferment on property taxes. If somebody subdivided and that increased the property value, they wouldn't have to pay for 5 years, but that was a deferral. But we couldn't. Now we sent a letter this year to go to a tax abatement, but we have to have approval from the state. So under what kind of rules could we give a private developer a tax abatement if, in fact, how we do that has to be governed by state law, and you're a state agency coming here and telling us that maybe we have to do tax abatement? I guess I need some clarification on what that means.
Well, so in Anchorage right now, they have a system in place that was is consistent with the state law that allows them the flexibility to offer tax incentives, maybe not an abatement, but incentives for the redevelopment of property. And in their case, they have a specific ordinance that gives people, fixes the appraised value of a piece of property and then gives them a reduction on the increase in value after rehab value, so that you don't really undercut what you were getting before in terms of taxes. You only reduce the additional that you might get from the redevelopment of the property. And so, excuse me, perhaps abatement might be a more specific terminology. Probably a better terminology would be kind of tax incentive, because I think there's a lot of different things that communities can do under the state law.
So there are programs under state law that are available that we have not availed ourselves of. There are three that are potentially applicable that we would have to adopt by ordinance.
And if I might add, I think that the way that a process might work to redevelop that site is not necessarily going to mandate that there be some tax incentives. I think what's important in a process like this is that when you start the process, you tell the development community, here are some options that you can look at, and you should propose to us a package that we can review that might have one or more of these types of techniques. And then you look at the deal that they propose, and you make a determination as to whether that's something that you want to do or not. One of the things that we've done in other places for our own projects is present, you know, a kind of a package of financing, and then we ask the development community to give us their best, you know, their best case scenario in terms of how much money they could save us, what resources they need, what resources they don't need, you know, allow them to be creative and use the entrepreneurialism of the private sector to get the best deal that you can in terms of the resources they have. And so wouldn't necessarily be that you have to provide a tax abatement and parking considerations and, you know, do these other things. But if you express your interest in getting a wide variety of options on the table, you'll get a better result.
So if I understood what you said early on, you think that in order to make, because of the cost associated with what's now the state of the building, it would have to be a combination of commercial, market rate, and possibly more affordable units, but certainly not an affordable housing project. Is that what you said?
Yes, because commercial development is generally more valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means that you can finance more of it, and there's less necessity for other types of things to fill those gaps. It's really, in the end, it's a function of what they propose in a combination of those three things. It might not, you know, ever be just commercial, and I think that from Liz, I'm talking to Amy, there's if you take one route over the other, there's a public purpose that is required, which may not be met by a solely commercial property, but that's part of the details you have to work through.
Thank you. The things that you're talking about are sort of step at least three or four. We don't own the property, so we're
right.
Still on step one.
I have to excuse myself. I'm a planner, so I like to think three or four steps down the road so that I don't get my boss in trouble.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Jones.
Well, maybe for our attorney or city manager, but I think my comment that the last meeting was every time we get an update, this becomes more an expensive proposition, and it sounds like it hasn't gotten any cheaper. And I'm concerned about if the most viable option is commercial. I'm not sure that this town could support that there. And I also don't know if we have the developers in Juneau or developers someplace else who would have an interest in Juneau that would be willing to go to all the effort to give us a proposal that says, if you give us these kind of incentives, here's what you'll get, and we'll buy the property and go forward. I certainly don't want to end up in Juneau with a building that reminds us of the new legislative offices in Anchorage. So what are our options if we do nothing? The press reported that the owners were going to demolish it. I don't know if that's moving forward or not. But I guess what's our options for gaining control of the property that gives us the most options on how we may or may not use that property in the future?
The nuisance action, bringing a nuisance action or a code enforcement action requiring the owners to demolish the property. So a demolition action, I guess. That gives us the most options with respect to what can end up in there. If we go the eminent domain route, we are limited. There may be an argument made to the court that it's just not economically viable a project unless we let a developer use a portion of it for commercial space, but we will be getting our public purpose out of it, our public use out of it. I don't know if that has been, I know it has not been litigated with our Supreme Court. I don't know if that would be a successful argument or not. I would hope it would be, but to give us the most options would be to not go through an eminent domain process, but to require the owner to take care of the property, and if the owner doesn't, to then take care of it and sell it.
But that's what we're doing right now, right?
Aren't we doing that?
No. No.
Let's do that.
If I might just follow up before. So the nuisance option, I almost think gives us less options in that we say tear it down, they don't, we tear it down, put a lien against their property, they sell it, then they owe us, or we take it because they haven't paid their debt, and then we sell the property, but that doesn't necessarily give us much leverage to get something out of it, because I think all we're trying to do then is recover the cost that it cost us to demolish the property.
That is the option that leaves the property available to anyone who wants to purchase it for a purpose that we find acceptable. I mean, if if we go through that process that you just described, where we have an order requiring the Barretts to demolish the property, they don't do it, we do it, we put a lien on the property, and we foreclose on that lien, that forces a sale of the property. That doesn't give us the property. It forces a foreclosure sale of the property. We are paid out of that sale. It's done. Whoever wants the property now owns it and has a site that they can build on. There aren't any public purpose requirements. There are no restrictions on the property at that point. That's why I said it gives us the most options, because it allows private developers to come in and do what they want with the property rather than be restricted to a public purpose.
But we end up with a vacant lot in private hands that could sit there and be vacant for years.
That is correct.
And I apologize. I'm missing steps here. If that were the end result, that a private developer bought the blank lot for our cost of demolition, why didn't they buy it and demolish it themselves?
Why didn't who?
That private developer we're imagining?
We can't take the property unless we take it through an eminent domain process. The Barretts are not selling it. So our only options to force either a sale, we can either force a sale, and this is assuming that the Barretts do not go ahead and demolish the property and sell it, which maybe they would do that. But let's say they don't. At the end of the nuisance action, our end result is we have forced a sale of that property. The property is flat. A private developer can come in and purchase. The other option is we take title through the eminent domain process. Now it's our property. What Mr. Romick told me is that in order to get anyone interested, or in order to make the project attractive enough to get a private developer to come in and do anything with it, we're going to have to turn over a clean site, which is the $1.2 to $2 million in order to make it a clean site. And whether we get that back depends on how much a private developer would then come in and pay for the site.
Mr. Mayor, just one last.
Go ahead, Mr. Joe.
I guess maybe I'm a different kind of learner, but I guess at this point in time, I would like to see a couple of three options in writing with all of the steps either we need to take, Alaska Housing needs to take. Is there things what we need to do in concert with each other? I mean, I would like to see it in writing so that I can say if we do the nuisance action, this might be the end result. If we do eminent domain, if we involve Alaska Housing, we don't involve Alaska Housing. I guess at this point, I've had a lot of discussion and there's a lot of things running through my head and memories, and I guess I would like to see this in writing from somebody with numbers, a plan, step by step. We have to do this, we have to do this, we have to do this, end product is. We have to do, we have to do, we have to do, end product. We can then debate it from the paper whether we want to do that, but right now I've just heard so much that I'm not sure I can put it all together in my head.
And a time frame maybe too.
Absolutely, because We thought we could do this in 3 months, and we've been talking about it for 3 months and haven't done step one yet. So. Right.
Ms. Crane.
Well, the time frame is the issue I was going to bring up, too, because when we know from our end that when we get involved in the courts, things take much longer than we want them to. So when we're talking about doing a lien and maybe trying to convince the court, I want to know how long some of those steps potentially are, so that we're not sitting here a year from now with the building in the same shape it's in.
Thank
you.
Then Mr. Keel.
What are our options if they just come on in and they tear it down and do what they said they're going to do and we don't force them to do anything? Do we have any options at that point if they do? Because that's what they said they're going to do.
No.
I think we are going through an awful lot of exercises, but it's probably a good idea to be ready. But it's possible that they'll come in and do it and clean it up. That's real yeah. Pollyanna type of yes. Yes.
We should give them a
but it is this is a slight possibility. We have no options if they were to do that, right?
That is correct, and our understanding is that they continue to take action with the property that is continuing to cause it to deteriorate faster and faster.
Can I ask,
Mr.
Follow up? So, let's say they say they're going to do it, and they actually come in and do a little something. Do we have any rights to give them a limited time and say you have to have this done by this date?
We could initiate a demolition action that's an administrative action using the International Property Management Code that would require that would result in a demolition order. There is an administrative appeal process that's, I think, a 20-day process, but that is a quick process that we could do now. And I can do as Mr. Jones asked, but the only thing I want to be careful of is it is not going to be a step-by-step because the problem, the monkey wrench that got thrown into this is the property is in such a bad shape that if we do the eminent domain process, which I can spell out what that would entail, we can't get anybody interested or we can't get anybody to work with us on the project. It's going to be too expensive and there's not going to be a big enough return. So I can't tell you what steps we can take to make it so. That's going to depend on a lot of different things. So I can lay out your different options again and tell you what those are, if that would be easier.
But if we had to demolish it, you could tell us the cost of X amount.
Under all of the options, we are going to have to demolish it,
right?
Unless they do it themselves.
So assuming that Pollyanna doesn't get steak and ice cream, and I guess in terms of time frames and deadlines, how long do we have if we do the nuisance action thing to come up with the cash to demolish it?
If we do an administrative demolition action, if he doesn't follow through within the time period that he is supposed to, then we would want to go ahead and take care of it. It's not... We are part of that action is we are taking the position that that building needs to come down. It's a public danger. And
Amen.
So we're not going to want to let that go on forever. But recall, no matter which process we use, the eminent domain process requires us to submit to the court the money that we think represents the value of the property. So there is an upfront cost no matter which process is involved.
Unbalanced.
And but no strict time frame.
None of the processes except for eminent domain. We cannot file eminent domain without having that money ready to go.
Well, but that's probably negative.
And that would have to be an argument for the court because of, that's different than having a set demo cost that you argue over. That's the appraisal cost has been varied.
Ms. White?
Okay, forgive me if I feel like I'm rehashing some of this stuff, but I came in the middle of this, actually a few years after the whole process started. The fire was in 2012. In 2013 and 2014, what I remember was there were people that wanted to buy this property, and the city basically got in there. Those people have disappeared.
No.
Now the Barretts say they're going to tear down the building, but we're proceeding as if they're not.
No.
You don't feel that that's the case?
That we were not... I know we were not involved. The law department was not involved in any way in 2012 and 2013.
Mm-hmm.
The building got condemned eventually because of the state of the roof. There were orders requiring him to put on a temporary roof, so there were building actions going on. But that would not have prohibited a sale. And right now what we were told... we have made ourselves available to any private developer who is talking to the Barretts about purchasing the property, and there's been no roadblock, but that just has not gone anywhere.
Okay. It's a little different than the rumble. It just, like Mr. Jones, I feel like every time this subject comes up, the situation is more and more difficult,
yes,
and exponentially more expensive. So we've got to get to some sort of a resolution. It just doesn't seem to want to go anywhere.
You get the owner to sell it, we'll appreciate that.
Yep.
That's the main thing. If we could, that would be the...
Mm-hmm. That would be ideal.
Yeah. But we've been trying to do that. Anybody else?
Let's move.
So, awesome.
Yeah. So we're going to...
Thank you very much. I really appreciate
it. Is this going to come back to us when?
So you're mm-hmm. going to give us some proposals in writing at least? So we can read your proposals?
My understanding is you want a memo that lays out the basic three options that you have for moving forward.
What are the three?
Eminent domain, which is either doing something that keeps AHFC able to be involved, which is going to require demoing the site, offering some sort of incentive package, et cetera. Eminent domain where Alaska Housing is not involved, it's still going to require us to demo the site and put together a package, but we're running the RFP ourselves, and a nuisance or an administrative demo action.
That's what I'm interested in.
Yeah. Okay, everybody hears that?
Yep.
That's our next step. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Romick. Appreciate it. We'll move on to assembly reports. Some of you have seen the email from Mila Cosgrove. Ms. Kiefer's yearly evaluation is due next month, and she's going to start a 360 that we did 2 years ago, similar to it. And if you will all read the email and go to the website, excuse me, you can do the Survey Monkey and fill in your thoughts and comments. If you don't want to do it that way, please get with me, and I want your input. Again, just like I've said in the last 2 or 3 years doing this, I want your input, and if that's on a back of a napkin, that's fine with me. But I need something in writing from each one of you to give us a little bit of a working room. Sometime in the next... couple of meetings, we'll have a sit down with Ms. Kiefer and go over her last year's evaluation and review what she's done in the past year. So, and I think a couple of you had some comments. Did Mila send that email out to everybody? Do you know Ms. Crane?
Okay. No, it was an email I sent to her and to you,
yeah,
and she just responded back
okay.
directly to me.
Okay. If any of you have any questions about the 360 that you don't understand or that you want to see it keep separate or whatever, it does keep that separate. The nine of us will be, when you sign up and you sign in to the evaluation, you'll say you're at the level of assembly, and the nine of us will be in that figure, or eight of us. Last time around, only eight of us did that. And then there's also going to be a backup with the leadership team. Ms. Kiefer wants to know what the leadership team is thinking now, and it's been 2 years, so it's a good time, she thought, too. And that also gives me, or whoever's going to do this, and in fact, I can ask this right now. If somebody wants to do the evaluation, I can voluntarily give it to any one or two of you to do if you so wish.
You mean collect the numbers and tallies?
Yeah, and write it, too.
You do a good job.
Nice try.
Okay, so we're going to just keep moving forward at it this way. It's not a perfect setup by any means, but it's something that we have to do and that Ms. Kiefer needs to have done in a timely fashion as well as from us. And then following that, we bump right into Ms. Amy Mead's evaluation, and we will do a 360 on her also and use that documentation to put together her evaluation also, which isn't due until June. But we'll keep moving forward here with everything because all of a sudden we're past June and we haven't got the two evaluations completed by any means. I'm looking for a place to have a meeting about the economic development plan. So I've sat down and I've met with JCVB, Juneau, also JEDC, Juneau Chamber, the Builders Association, Southeast Builders Association. Ms. Kiefer has met with the airport boss, the board president, and showed them what we want them to do within that economic development plan. And there was one or two more, too. Anyway, about six or seven different groups. They have all been very excited to help and to take some of those actions and work on them. So, and of course, JEDC, I think, has stepped up to the plate and insinuate that they want to do a big hunk, four or five of those initiatives all together and work on those. So if we can get a couple more of those organizations to take one or two of those initiatives and work on and bring them back to us, we'll be able to get a lot more of this economic development plan accomplished in more of a timely manner than just a 10-year plan. I think it's great. It's a 10-year plan. We can stretch it all out 10 years, and we're going to have to. We're not going to be able to get anywhere near all of that done all at once. But so what I'm looking for is a meeting time, and next month there's an open Monday.
Oh, no.
That's what I said. I said, no, there isn't.
How'd that happen?
There isn't going to be an open Monday.
Never.
And what I would like to do is bring those six or seven groups in and sit down as those groups and us, either as Committee of the Whole or as the Assembly as a whole, I don't care which, and kind of discuss back and forth and help figure out the best way to move forward on the economic development plan. Because I don't want the economic development plan to just sit there. There's other things that we can talk about with the economic development plan. There's some recommendations in there to hire a person, maybe in an economic development director. Maybe that's a way we go, but we can put that on the table of finance and see where we're at the end of our finance committee meetings before we start hiring anybody for anything yet. But I think those are the types of things that need to go on that list of maybe some wishes, because we have other ones, the bus, the transit system improvements, the kids, the schools, getting that back up to the cap. So there's three or four big items that I think are on all of our wish list to try to get to. Now, whether we've made enough changes, not only in the budget, but also in taxes and everything else, that the city manager has done and that we've done, we don't know yet. We're trying to shake that all out right now. And I know that Bob is working on that to come up with some type of numbers at the end. Everything was rounded up into categories, and you might get this much and you might get this much. And so we have to kind of wait here and see where exactly we're at and whether or not we've done enough one way or the other, for sure. So I'm looking for that one open night in, April 20th, probably, to do this. If any of you have any other ideas or suggestions, please let me know. I'm just trying to find a route to go forward with this thing. And we have a bunch of other meetings coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Who's got the list over there?
We've got finance on Wednesday. We have a COW on the 23rd, a week from tonight, and then there's the joint Bartlett Assembly meeting on the 25th. And the meeting on the 25th will be at Bartlett.
5:15.
Okay. Is that a 5 or 5? That 5 is something different?
5:15.
Okay.
And they serve dinner.
Yes, they are going to.
Wow. Where is the Bartlett building?
In the administrative building.
So ask them to freeze my
second
dinner.
Yeah, mine too.
Okay, so those are the meetings, and lots of things going on. Tomorrow is a Southeast Conference. If any of you are attending Southeast Conference, it starts between 7 and 8 with a little bit of breakfast and talk, and then at 8 o'clock it starts officially at the Jack for tomorrow and the next day. What else?
That was a lot for you.
I'm tired already.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's my report as the mayor's report. Ms. Becker, you want to go down your committee reports?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just we had a committee of the whole meeting and where we talked about the North Franklin lot and put that back out to bid. School board budget actually had a nice time of meeting with them in person as a group together. And senior housing, we heard a report on that. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. At the last Lands Committee meeting, we spent most of our time on the Hidden Valley question that we deferred tonight to our next assembly meeting, and we also got an update on the Lands Fund, something I found useful since it's been around since long before I was on the assembly. So if the members haven't had a chance to read that in the last Lands packet, you might find it entertaining or informative.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Ms. Green.
As the mayor mentioned, there is a finance committee meeting this Wednesday evening. The packet was passed out this evening, I believe, and I'm going to be out of town. Mr. Keel will be presiding over the meeting.
Thank you, Ms. Crane. And we're going to finally get our where we're at with the budget so that we're all not fibbing to the press and telling them a different number?
We'll give you a range.
We're close.
Okay.
We're close.
It's just interesting to hear the past week or two, all of us have said something different.
I know. Someone said to me, don't you pass out talking sheets or talking points?
So hopefully we'll get close to a number that we all can give out instead of anywhere from 2 million to 9 million.
Wednesday night.
Thank you. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Public Works and Facilities Committee met March 2nd. There were action items that were acted upon tonight. Those were the Seward statute and the electrical vehicle resolution, McGinnis subdivision paving LID, and which is coming up. McGinnis subdivision is on Back Loop at Montana Creek on the south side of Back Loop Road there. And there was some discussion about the possibility of a Public Works consolidated shop and the figure $10 million. There was also talk about moving things around so that the recycling center, these are my words, could be co-located with household hazardous waste. Currently in that building, there is salt storage where the household hazardous waste takes place. And there's some issues that might come to bear out at the recycling center. And so there's discussion about possibly putting the recycling center and household hazardous waste together in that building if they can figure out some storage for some of the street stuff somewhere else. And they have also been looking at the possibility of a covered, what I will call, road treatment building. Not necessarily a building, might be more like a pole barn or a fabric even type enclosure erected. The next meeting is scheduled for noon on the 23rd here in the chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Human Resources Committee met prior to our meeting tonight. We had a pretty full agenda. We got through it relatively easily. So I'll just try to go down the topics. We had a follow-up. The Committee of the Whole had referred the Empowered Aquatic Facility Board issue back to the Human Resources Committee for review. We asked a series of questions and asked the manager to form a committee to look at those. Those questions were answered in writing and are part of the packet. We had some discussion about those. We also, in reviewing that, want to make some changes to the draft ordinance, one of which was to include the director of Parks and Rec and a representative from the school district as liaisons. Also, we had a considerable amount of discussion about limitations on who could be on the board, especially related to involvement within various swim groups.
and how to keep a seven-member board from becoming all seven members of a swim club. And so I think I have, between the minutes and some instructions, and I have talked to the manager about meeting with her and the attorney sometime later this week to start the discussion about those. But the committee wanted to be sure that we had a draft for introduction on April 6th. It would be heard for public hearing later on in April, and I will try to make sure that we have that draft in line with what the committee talked about tonight. We had the annual report from the Animal Hearing Board, and there was no action taken because the members of that committee are appointed by the city manager. We had the annual report from the Personnel Board, and we also had an annual appointment to the Personnel Board, and the Human Resources Committee recommended Judith Porter to be reappointed to the Personnel Board with a term to expire 1/31/2018.
Is there any objection to that recommendation? I think where I was there, Mr. Jones. Hearing none, so ordered.
We also had a annual report from the Board of Equalization, and we had four members' terms were up. We only had three applicants, and the Human Resources Committee recommends David Epstein and Mike Boyer be reappointed, and that Steve Mosley be appointed, all three to terms expiring 12/31/2017.
Are there any objections to those recommendations? Hearing none, so ordered.
And that still leaves one vacancy on that board. We just did not have an applicant. We also had a report from the Juneau Public Library Endowment Board, their annual report, and there were no appointments to that committee. There's only three members. The significant part of that annual report, I believe, was that the committee has been working with finance to look at their investment strategy, and they have been transferring funds into, if I get this right, transfer funds from the general investment pool of the CBJ long-term portfolio to the CBJ long-term portfolio currently through Vanguard. They have made two transfers to date. They intend to make two more transfers, the last one being in September of 2015, in the hopes that going into the more long-term Vanguard plan will help their interest. But they also want to maintain some cash while they're working on through the library. And basically, I believe the library plan is moving forward.
And Mr. Jones, this will keep their account separate still?
Yes.
So it can be accounted for?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
We also reviewed Ordinance 2015-18, an ordinance establishing the Treadwell Arena Advisory Board. That was introduced in the consent agenda to be heard at April 6th for a public hearing. We had one email requesting us to look at the makeup of the board, and we took no action. We'll wait for the public hearing unless we hear more. And then Resolution 2718, we dealt with. We pulled that from the consent agenda, and we passed that. That was on the Juneau Commission on Sustainability. We dealt with the liquor licenses, and we dealt with the Medicaid issue tonight. And then we did schedule the June meetings of the Human Resources Committee meeting as a committee of the whole, to do the Airport Board, Eagle Crest Board, Docks and Harbors Board, and potentially, if the ordinance passes through, an Aquatics Empowered Board. We've set those dates for June 10th at 5:30 and June 15th at 5:30. And we'll meet those as a committee of the whole so we can make appointments to the three boards that exist and the potential of a fourth. And I think that's the Human Resources Committee actions tonight.
Mr. Jones, do you know if there's any other questions from the assembly members that haven't been answered? There was questions that I think Ms. Green had.
Yeah, and I had, and they came from the Human Resources. And no, I haven't at this point. No other assembly member has approached me with questions. If they want to, please do so while we're working through this process. Mm-hmm. April 6th, hopefully we'll have an ordinance for introduction. It'll be the end of April then when there's the actual public hearing, so there's time to get those questions answered. You can check with the, ask them through the city manager. If you want to ask them through me as the Human Resources Chair, that's fine either way.
Good, good. Thank you very much. Thank you for all your work. Any other questions for Mr. Jones? Mr. Jones, you want to do liaison reports?
Yes, Mr. Chair. This is going to be real easy. The Downtown Business Association meeting is Thursday this week. The Planning Commission met with the Assembly on the 10th, and I was on the phone. Neither Mr. Nankervis or I attended the meeting following that. And I did not make it to the JEDC meeting as I was on an airplane south or doing something with basketball. I don't know if Ms. Troll was there, but she dropped off, but I believe you were there for part of it. But I'll get caught up and report back later.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Nankervis?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Docks and Harbors feels to me like I've been shorting them a little bit, so I will give you not the Reader's Digest version tonight, sorry. On 16B, the art project, the field has been narrowed to four artists by the nine-member panel and will meet further on April 20th. Docks and Harbors and Engineering have monthly teleconferences with the contractor Manson Construction. That's who got the bid on 16B. They're working on the pile caps and the catwalk fabrication right now. The project is proceeding without any issue. They're expecting the large concrete float to begin casting next month in April. And my understanding is it's just one big float. So we'll see. Douglas Harbor, there are demolition plans and specs being advertised, and the bids open March 19th. Finally, Yay. Finally on that. Stater Harbor, if you have been out there, you know that work is proceeding according to plan with Miller Construction. On Aurora Harbor, the approach ramp and the float assemblies are going in and proceeding on time. And you can see that when you drive by on Egan. They're expecting substantial completion by May 31st, which was their date they had predicted a while ago. And that's on what I believe is being called phase one on the Aurora Harbor stuff. The port director has recently presented to both Gastineau Rotary and the Territorial Sportsman and appeared on Action Line with the Harbor Master within the last month. Docks and Harbors received an award from the Juneau branch of the American Society of Civil Engineers for the downtown cruise ship terminal staging area. Kudos to them. Next meetings for them, the comprehensive fee review for the harbors, this is the harbors, is at 12 p.m. March 24th, room 224. Comprehensive fee review for docks is at 5:30 p.m. March 19th in room 224. And the next Docks and Harbor regular board meeting is Thursday, March 26th at 5:30 here in Chambers. Now, Eagle Crest, this will be shorter, which you could probably expect. They met March 5th. They, according to their reports, they have operated the Porcupine Lift for 34 days this season and 5 days on the Upper East Side. Hmm. Not real good, but the Weeski and some of the custom groups have been able to function because they've had the Porcupine Lift open. It's estimated that between 1,200 and 1,500 people were at the fireworks spectacular on February 14th. And the revenue this year is just over $1.03 million in revenue this year. And they have an estimated loss, and I talked to Matt Lillard tonight, and confirm this, that it's still expected this year it's going to be right around $100,000 loss even after that revenue. So could be worse.
Yep, could be.
Could be better. Their next meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, April 1st at 5:30 in room 224. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Nan-Purvis. Ms. Pledisetsky.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Parks and Rec Advisory Committee met on March 3rd. They welcomed three new members, some new energy on that group. They were sad to see the chairman go, old chairman, who was there for so long time. But the new chair is Chris Myrtle. And they spent quite a bit of time talking about their retreat, what they would plan to do, and begin to review the Parks and Rec comp plan. It hasn't been done in a while, so they're actually excited about doing that. The Local Emergency Planning Committee, or the LEPC, met on March 11th. It's a very active group. There's 15 to 20 people that come to that noon in the downtown fire station. And they talked about the ALICE training, the Active Threat Response Community Training that was going to be given that very day, which I understand was quite successful. Lots of people came. It's a new way to train schools, and our schools are on board with that about actively responding to threats, not just the old model was
duck and cover.
Duck and cover, yeah. Exactly. So that was going well. There's going to be a tsunami warning test on March 25th at 10:15 a.m., and they're looking for feedback. You should be hearing it if you don't hear it. If you do hear it, go to ready.alaska.gov and report whether you heard it or not. They're trying to improve that system. So that's March 25th, 10:15 a.m., ready.alaska.gov to report on that. And then there will be a Bartlett MASH casualty exercise on April 9th, and they're looking for volunteers to act as victims. So if anybody wants to help out, that would be appreciated. And contact Mike Lopez at Bartlett and volunteer to get yourself bandaged up.
Mr. Nan-Purvis, if you want to act like a crazy guy, you can there.
I don't have to act, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
I wasn't going to put it that way.
And the next meeting is April 8th at noon.
Ms. Crane, thank you.
I reported on the last hospital board at a previous meeting. Just another reminder that we are having a joint meeting with the hospital board next week, and then their next meeting is the following night after that. I have a very brief report on NACO. Would you like to have it here or later? Mm-hmm. I am the Alaska Municipal League representative to NACO, which is the National Association of Counties, which puts me on the NACO board. I attended the legislative meetings in Washington, February the 21st to the 25th. And while there, attended two NACO board meetings, also attended sessions related to telecommunications and technology, their steering committee. I sat in on a number of public lands steering committee meetings, also listened to the roundtable discussion on the transfer of public lands. Very interesting. While there, the current AML president, Linda Murphy, Kathy Wasserman, who is the executive director of AML, and I met with Senator Sullivan's staff member. We also met with Representative Young and his staff, and Senator Mikowski and her staff, and talked about PILT, which NACO is working very hard on PILT. Also, they have a plan. They are trying to get secure rural schools funding through this year. So that we would get funding this year, but I wouldn't hold your breath on that one. I think PILT will go through again next year. I'm very hopeful. Secure rural schools, I'm not so sure about it.
We got 32,000 this year, Ms. Gray.
I am. We the state got 14 million last year, and this year the state is getting 50,000. So big difference. Juneau has lost about $860,000 this year, $865,000 from the loss of secure rural schools monies. I also had an opportunity while I was there to talk to all three delegations about the rural hospital demonstration project and concerns on that, because that project terminates the 30th of June this year, and that means between $2 to $3 million. For Bartlett Hospital, a loss if the project isn't reauthorized. And so we had an opportunity to talk about that. We also talked about our concerns with the bill Waters of the U.S. And NACO is generally in favor and is pushing for the Marketplace Fairness Act, which would provide sales tax on internet sales. There are six states in the United States that do not have a sales tax. This is problematic for those six states, the way this would be, the way this would roll out. Because under the Marketplace Fairness Act, money goes to the state. We have a sales tax in our community, other communities that have a sales tax. There's a potential for some great problem there on how this could be rolled out. So anyway, we shared our concerns with the delegation on that, and in one case they were not aware of that, so it was a very good visit. So I think it was a very worthwhile meeting.
Thank you, Ms. Crane. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I can be pretty brief on liaison reports because at the last school board meeting I was not able to attend. We were meeting jointly with the Planning Commission that evening. The last meeting of the UAS Campus Council was March the 2nd, and we heard a fascinating presentation actually on the use of electronic media in the educational context. It was so good, I'm following Professor Graham on Twitter ever since. And I think there were some members of the council who learned what Twitter was, as well as, you know, Minecraft. And anyway, it occurs to me that I skipped my report on the Marijuana Policy Committee during committee reports. Would it be all right if I touch that briefly on that now?
No, can't.
All right. We're all set then.
Mr. Keel, go ahead.
Just leave it to us. No, thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Marijuana Policy Committee met March the 12th and got a basic set of lessons I needed, sort of the rudiments of the plant and what people do with it and what people make from it. And I think it was pretty useful. The conversation got into price points in Juneau for various marijuana products that people are using these days and that folks would like to retail when legalization takes full effect. We also got an update on what I would maybe call the state of chaos with current state legislation and what's going on there. I'd like to come back to that under comments and questions in a minute. We heard a report from the Community Development Department, which sort of walked through the table of permissible uses as it might pertain to potential marijuana businesses, where you could have greenhouses, where you could have retail operations, manufacturing, testing, et cetera. And the last item on our agenda was a list of five fairly pressing questions from the city attorney. The committee prioritized actually that work on our zoning as our first order of business to dig into more deeply and start making recommendations that will go through the Planning Commission process, as well as soon as we've got any sense of what the state's up to, looking at whether we should designate a local regulatory authority. So those things will guide our work as we continue to go forward. We meet again a week from Thursday, which I think is the 26th.
Have you had any discussion on a local authority yet?
Mr. Mayor, not in any depth at all. The concept has been raised. In brief, until we have some sense of how much regulation the state's going to do, we won't really know what the benefits versus costs would be for the city to do that. State legislation has ranged from the point of actually preempting municipal regulation to leaving it almost entirely in our hands. But that's a giant question mark we're going to need to know.
Ms. Crane?
There was a Municipal League teleconference earlier this week also where the subject of marijuana revenues from the state was raised. Do we, as municipalities, want to lobby for any of the revenue from licenses that the state would issue and other revenues that they would generate? And Municipal League members generally said, no, we did not particularly want to compete for those resources, but we want to retain local control as far as taxes are concerned, any excise tax or any other issue. And Municipal League also raised the issue that we want to be sure that once those licenses are issued, that they are not transferable, so that the licenses, unlike liquor licenses or others, that they gain in value, that these licenses would not, so that you're issued a license, you go out of business, that license goes away, and there's no additional value associated. So that's a position that AML will be taking.
Well, thank you, Mr. Keel. And you'll bring something else up under comments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Ms. White.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thanks to the lack of a Finance Committee meeting, I was actually able to attend another airport board meeting. So I've been getting my feet wet there. Mr. Bartholomew is helping me understand a few things that I didn't quite get at the last meeting. Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureaus met a few times since then, and one of them was a social gathering. They made a great new promotional video about Juneau. But the great part was is most of the footage was provided by their members, so it kept their costs down really well. And I've watched it a few times, and it's just really professional looking. So
where
that was pretty
the members
exciting.
Go to watch it?
I can find the link to it and email it to everybody. I'll make myself a note
probably
right
go to
now.
JCVB.
Actually, I'm not probably sure that it's on there because it was still password protected at the point that I had it. So I have to see if it's still password protected.
I think it's out now.
Yeah, it may be. It's got a lot of drone stuff on it. Mm-hmm. Did you see it? It's pretty cool.
I've seen a link to it. But
okay.
Just
but it
this weekend
cool.
I saw it.
So, but like I said, the neat part was it didn't cost them a huge amount of money to do it because a lot of the footage was provided by their members. So mm-hmm. I'll send a link. That's
okay.
All I got.
Yep. Thank you very much. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Alaska Committee met, and one of the, there were a number of items discussed, but one that I thought fit with us, daylight savings time, definitely opposed. It's going to be very difficult on our businesses. Evening light is important in order for the lights and so forth to continue. And people, according to what Alaska Committee has sort of researched, people go home when it's go home, like back to their ship when it starts to get dark. And so it'll just be a disastrous thing for our tourist industry. And we're going to do polling. We're doing polling right now in the airports for exit. I told you about that before. We're going to do a Kramer polling, which will be statewide. Chambers having the retreat, their retreat on April 3rd. And I didn't, a dig report, you know, Kristen Cox from NCAD gave a report on marijuana, which is very, very good. It had to do with state law, city law, city ordinances, and just general information. She was very factual, did not get into any of her own personal feelings. I mean, she just gave us factual stuff, and I sent it to, I can't remember who I sent it to, our attorney got it at any rate, sent it to the attorney to, and to Mr. Keel, to see that if it was approved to be put on the marijuana website, and it was approved, and the marijuana committee also got it and are able to ask for hard copies if they want it. I thought it was really a good report, just kind of some history of things that have happened for about marijuana and so forth. It was good. And so, that's it, I think.
Thank you.
Except for when you do the other, then I have something.
What other?
what other, you know, the other where you get comments.
Okay. Presiding officers' reports. Do we have any presiding officers?
Nothing new to report, Mr. Mayor.
All right. Coming up soon.
Read.
A month away.
Okay.
So.
1,300 pages, or is it more?
1,700.
1,700?
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Boy,
better get reading.
Can't stay awake to read it.
Okay. Impressive. We'll move on to assembly comments and questions. Ms. Becker.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of things that, you know, I've done is the KINY and KJNO type thing with Pete, and then Capital Chat. Finished Success Inside and Out. It was a real, very much a success. I don't know, for some reason the people seem to be, all the inmates seem to be very cooperative. And thank you for the donation to the Seward statue. And there's the artist's rendition of it. That is how it's going to look. It's the pedestal, as you know, is marble from Marble Island. It'll have William Howard, what's his middle name, H. Seward, in the state of Alaska, and he'll be positioned between the two flags, but on the plaza of the court building. But when you look at him up this way, he'll be positioned between the two flags. He's wearing the cape, which is what he wore when he was here. It's slightly blowing in the wind. We didn't let it blow as much as it could have blown up here. But it just has a little bit of the movement. So I think it's going to be really nice, really nice. And we have we're now about one third of the way in raising our money. So still we have a lot more to do. But it's anyway. Just got that today. It's hot off the press from David Rubin, our artist.
Our is that sculptor. Mr. Steedle as a
yes.
mannequin? Okay. All right. Anything else, Ms. Becker?
No, that's good enough.
Okay, Ms. White?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I did forget one thing. The Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau had passed a resolution in regards to the daylight savings time, feeling that that would be detrimental to their business. And let's see, I'm going to be leaving town on Friday and get back next Thursday around 2:00 in the afternoon. Kudos to Mr. Steedle. Made me look like a rock star getting answers for somebody really quick, like twice in the last week. And
not me, it's the people in the streets.
Well, you still did really good. I have had a few different people ask me where we're at on the paying bills online. One individual says that it would be easier to let the city attach her PFD than she doesn't use checks than to go get a money order and make an in-person trip and that sort of thing. So just if there's a chance that sometime in the next couple weeks I could get an update on that. That'd be great. So that's all I have.
Thank you. Ms. White? Mr. Keel.
What do you mean look like a rock star? You're not?
No, I said he looked like a rock star. Okay. Oh, well, he made me look like a rock star. Yeah, that's it. You're right.
We want to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have one thing under comments and questions. I mentioned earlier the relative chaos of what the legislature may or may not do with regard to the marijuana initiative. Got a request today that I talked over with the CBJ lobbyist. Our law department has been, along with many other municipal attorneys, serving as a resource to some folks in the Capitol building on what the bare minimums are that municipalities need to understand and operate under the initiative. Not getting into the decriminalization elements, not getting into the details of regulation, but clarifying terms, clarifying some very basic divisions between state and municipalities. And so I would request, having actually talked with our lobbyist a little bit about this today, I would request that we, the Assembly, authorize the lobbyist and the city attorney, with direction from the mayor, to advocate for some of those minimum things. Nobody knows what bill they'll go on. I can't give you a bill number right now. Actually, I can't. Right now, House Bill 75 addresses those minimums. But given that it's fluid and a moving target, I would ask that we authorize them to advocate for those bare minimum things that anybody's going to need going forward to pass this year.
And they both know what those bare minimum things are?
The city attorney's office has been working pretty extensively with fellow city attorneys from around the state.
Okay. Any objection? Mr. Gladysatry?
I have no objection. Just a bare minimum for me is a keeping the ability for us to have the option to have a local authority. I think that's something we should, is a bare minimum. Whether we do it or not is another question, but I wouldn't want them to take that away.
I would like to see what the bare minimums are, in your opinion, when you get to it, when you have it done.
I can tell you, if you...
You can.
A definition of public place would be nice, although that we've defined it locally. And HB 75 actually uses almost verbatim the same definition that we recently passed. Somehow addressing the marijuana establishments, the smoking clubs, establishment of a protest process when licenses or registrations are issued by the state, having a protest process in place for municipalities to object to licenses, because right now under the initiative there's no process within which to do so, allowing us to enact either civil or criminal penalties for violations of both state and local ordinances. That might be the main ones, the local regulatory authority, and retaining the ability to enact time, place, and manner legislation.
And set our own
excise tax. Time, place, manner legislation.
And then the other elements of 75 that are not particularly important to us but to many others would be how the local option elections would work, especially in the unorganized borough, but how the opt-in, opt-out rules would be set up so that they can be used.
And you know, this stuff is going to circle back to us all the time here, so we're going to get new items that end up being important and minimums probably that we want to have. And I'm sure that both the lobbyist and our law department will come back to us, and they won't overstep their bounds. Miss Mead didn't even smile on that one. Anyway, so
if it's
all right, we'll give them the go-ahead with the expectation that they make sure that they keep us in the loop and feed us in on what they're doing.
Can I just ask the one question?
Sure.
Did you say that one of the things that you feel that has to be in law from the state is to authorize smoking clubs?
No, to address marijuana establishments.
Address and authorize are two different words. That's true. I'm glad. I mean, I would just hate to see our smoking ordinance go down the tube because of marijuana smoking. That's just my feeling about what could happen.
Mr. Keith?
And thank you, Mr. Mayor. And with that, I guess it was implied, but let me make it explicit. I have gotten from a couple of my colleagues multiple compliments on both the work that Ms. Mead and Ms. Siebens have done when they have asked questions about how any given provision might affect a municipality. I have been told that they are thoughtful, they are responsive, they are proactive. And so I want to express my appreciation to our law department for helping out legislative offices that call when they're concerned about how their bills might affect municipalities.
Just as long as more than half the time they're not going up there.
I don't think I've seen them on a hill yet.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. It's nice to hear that. I mean, we get the same compliments from Mr. Bartholomew and a couple others who go up on the hill and help out with different things, financial and law and everything. So it's good to know our top dogs are very professional. Ms. Crane.
I'd like to have a report back at some point on where we are with the whale. And I keep hearing it may be ready this summer. Are we going to be ready to do our part this summer of that? So just, it doesn't have to be tonight, please.
No, it will be on Monday the 23rd.
It is.
Already on the agenda for the COW, and it is in your packet that
on
should be in front of you.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right. That was a good one. Ms. Gladys Effie.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Regarding the daylight savings issue, is that something we can either have a mayor write a letter or go on the record that the assembly opinion on that issue? I don't know. What do we do? Pass a resolution, something. Because I think it would be, as we heard from JCVB and Alaska Committee, I think it would be very bad for Juneau if that passed.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. And Ms. Crane and Ms. Becker and I attended a meeting with Governor Walker, Mrs. Walker, a new organization that is trying to be started in Juneau called Bridge Builders. It's modeled after an organization started in Anchorage. Seems like a wonderful thing. There were people there from the various communities, and that's getting off the ground, and so that's really, really nice to see.
Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Nate Curvis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I did neglect to mention when I talked to Matt from Eagle Crest this evening, he said they will be open again this weekend. So if you're jonesing for some snow, get it in this weekend before it's too late. I don't know how many more weekends they can sneak it out on the man-made snow. And Mr. Keel prompted me for my next request, which is if we could get a lobbyist update sometime soon. We're at that point, I think, in the session that it would be nice for all of us to hear from him, either via a memo, an email, or have him come down on the 23rd, but I'm sure the agenda's already packed for the 23rd, so I haven't looked at the packet yet, but it's probably pretty full, but I think I would like to get in the habit of not just hearing from our lobbyists once a year like we used to. I would like to hear from them and talk to them before the session, talk to them during the session, and talk to them again at the end. It's just like a wrap-up and stuff. So I think it serves us to do that, and it's probably in the contract as well. So thank you.
I'll talk to him. Get him down here. And with the lobbyist, there's going to be certain things that he can talk about and certain things that he can't talk about as far as at the time of what's going on up there, for sure. Okay. That hasn't come up in any of my conversations with him here lately. It's just that in the past, that's been a notion from our lobbyists in the past. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was going to pass, but a couple of issues have come up that made me just, I would like to ask a question about, depending on what the legislature does in terms of marijuana, to look at the issues around enforcement, if in fact there's no way to protest sort of the licensure of if it's a state license or something like that, if they don't pay sales tax or if we can tax or whatever. Some of the enforcement issues this evening talked about, you know, just how far we could go without sort of a business license. I also understand we can't be selective in issues around a business license. Also, it may or may not be judicial for our economic development plan. But I guess I would like to have some kind of discussion at some point on value of for enforcement, for sales tax enforcement. We keep publishing lists of people that are in arrears, and sometimes we go to court, sometimes we don't. But we don't have any action other than that. But if they had a business license, maybe there would be. I would just like some discussion as we get into more broader issues of businesses, whether or not this municipality, borough, should look at a local business license and what kind of enforcement that may allow us on some of these issues that we seem to be struggling with, especially with ones that come in, do business for 4 or 5 months and leave, and then we're trying to chase them down or find them or whatever. So I would like just some point, some discussion around
business license.
Be happy to put that on the finance.
And if we issued them for free, yes, I it's a good discussion to have. There's pros and cons of it all. So.
Absolutely.
Good.
And I thought there was a place where it said we should be discussing if there was going to be a lottery for it or how we were going to choose people who actually could get a license.
On the list for discussion, yes.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yeah, well, I think marijuana, like alcohol, there may be some limits. But in general, you know, we don't put a limit on the number of pawn shops or the number of jewelry shops or the number of this. And, you know, we get into enforcement issues around, you know, pawn shops or secondhand stores. We get enforcement issues on sales tax. We get enforcement issues on property. You know, we got all these enforcement issues, and it always seems to run up. Well, we can go so far, but since we don't give a business license, we can't go any further. We can't do a civil. We can't take away their ability to operate within the city. And so I just think we need to have some kind of discussion around that.
Mm-hmm. Broader than marijuana, you mean?
Because I don't think we can selectively issue a business license for alcohol and marijuana and not for auto repair shops. But, you know, what do I know?
Maybe we can, and the city attorney will tell us that. Mm-hmm. Okay, anything else? Can I do this or not?
Yes. Please, move to adjourn. Go for it.
Adjourn. Yeah. Mr. Mayor, can I get a ride home?
You've been listening to the CBJ Assembly meeting on KTOO Juneau. We'll now return to regularly scheduled programming.
In some place where you didn't have much air to breathe.
Yeah, if they forget you and you can't open it from the inside, you're dead.
Yeah, well, that was...